Blog Talk Radio.
Are you ready? Let's go!
Now, from the IMLD home studios, in its ninth season, you are listening to In Much Less Detail, the podcast, where we cut through the noise and give you your NFL breakdown in much less detail. Your football party is live with your hosts, Jay and Dre. If you can hear this, you survived. You made it to 2022. Let's go. Let's make this as good as we can under the circumstances. That's about all you can say about that. Welcome in. You are listening live to In Much Less Detail, the podcast. We are here with you on a Saturday night, January the 1st, 2022, first day of the new year, and you are here with us, and we thank you for that. I'm Dre. He's Jay. The NFL. They're trying. They're still trying to hold a season with all these cases coming down, the Omicron variant, Omicron, whatever, still winding its way through the league. Still a lot of question marks tomorrow, not quite as many as the last couple of weeks. But they're still going to put on a show. The show must go on, as always. Jay, your New Year's was very active, and you were telling me how you're kind of bushed, and you're going to give it the old college try tonight.
Yeah, this year lining up the schedule with Christmas and New Year's both falling on Saturdays and lining up with our shows has been making it fun. It's definitely making it interesting. Up, you know, the kids last night, the cute factors, they got their once a year. They got to stay up till midnight last night. Well, it was last year. Last year and last night. And they made it. I give them credit. I was starting to fade at 10:30, looking at the clock, like, man, it's past my bedtime. But I stayed up with them. We made it all the way till midnight. I got to tell you, I hit the bed probably about 10 after 12, and my normal ritual is I'll grab my phone and I'll start scanning the news or scanning YouTube or just and I think I made it about 2 minutes before the phone just fell on me and I was out.
That's it. It's over.
Yeah. Next thing I know, my wife's like nudging me, telling me that I'm pretty much like sleeping and like snoring, and yeah. I'm just laying there, and I still have the noise in the headphones in my ear, and some video. I didn't even know what the hell I was watching at that point, but yeah, up at 6 o'clock, worked all day. Here I am, ready to do the show. So I definitely can tell. I'm squinting at my monitor tonight a little more than usual.
Well, the football party is live and in effect. And
that's right.
Even though we may be kind of swaying a little bit in our seats during our party, we're still partying. We're still holding our party. And we're looking forward to having 2 hours of football chat and whatever else might come up. Week 16, as always, with the interesting results and the results that start to shape that playoff field a little bit more. There's a lot of messages, I think, that got sent. The Bengals obviously sent a message to the Ravens.
They sure did. I believe we were on that one.
I was on it a little more than everyone else because that was lock.
You locked that up.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of called how it was going to happen, too. I said Joe Burrow might have a little chip on his shoulder from not making the Pro Bowl and from some of the comments that was made from the Ravens coaching staff during the week.
Yeah,
Wink Martindale, the D coordinator, said, well, we're not going to have to double Jamar Chase. We're not fitting Joe Burrow for a green jacket yet, for a Hall of Fame jacket, a gold jacket, rather. And Joe Burrow said, okay, I'll just go out here and go for 525 on your ass. And you can fit me for whatever jacket you want at that point.
No, it was a great effort. And, Baltimore's defense, not holding up, not your typical Ravens defense that they've been playing this year. And that I looked at that first game that they played, and I didn't think that was a fluke. You know, we expected the subbing the first time around, you know, and the Bengals, you know, sort of not ready for prime time. And yeah, this go, I've seen the Bengals jump up and punch enough good teams in the face this year to realize that they're pretty good. You know, they might be fake as so far as, like, you know, championship caliber or AFC championship caliber, but I don't want to play them in the first round. Do you?
Absolutely not. And they can look unbelievable against, you know, a beat up secondary like that. That was,
yes, they, yes. Joe Burrow, going into the fourth quarter was looking at breaking some all time stuff. But still ends up going for 5.25. I mean, 525 yards passing.
Anytime you have an effort that rivals Andre the Giant's weight, you're doing some shit. You are putting it on somebody.
And it's not, to your point, as we've been talking about this, you know, I think we've sort of been, like, slowly each week admiring the Bengals more and more. Because of how they're doing it, you know, and they're finding different ways. And it's not just the Jamar Chase show anymore. And here it is. T. Higgins goes for almost 200 receiving.
Man. T. Higgins out of nowhere with a big
effort. Jamar Chase still had 125.
Right. As a sideshow. Like, here's a $1.25 for my guy over here. Just doling out some charity while I go to work on with these other guys. Yeah, it was Chase, it was T. Higgins, it was Boyd, it was everybody that wanted to get involved for the Bengals that could get involved. And I still, you know, as much as I respect the Ravens, maybe I'm giving them a little bit too much credit. I still know I still look at that secondary and how beat up it is and how missing basically their best, like, 3 or 4 cornerbacks, not just a few guys here and there that are out. Like, they've got some really, really great players that are not there at all, like, out for the year.
Right.
And
yeah,
that
can't
wasn't
really knock them, you know.
No, I'm trying not to take away from what Joe Burrow did, but I'm trying to give the Ravens their proper due. Because I really don't think at full strength they would have allowed anything like this. I mean, I understand Burrow had a chip, but 525, come on.
I'll say it this way, and this isn't a knock to the Ravens, right? Because it's easy to pick on the Ravens for giving up that much. But I'll say this. Joe Burrow and the Bengals did exactly what they should have done against the team that they were playing.
Correct.
So that's no knock on Baltimore. That's more of a state of that, you know, Baltimore's just, they're not healthy. They were down to their third quarterback. Cincinnati showed up, didn't overlook them. That's for sure.
Yep, 41-21. Josh Johnson tried. he gave it a nice effort in relief of Snoop Huntley and Lamar Jackson. Wasn't meant to be for Baltimore. So 941 total for Joe Burrow against the Baltimore Ravens this year,
man,
which is the most all time versus one team. You know, obviously the two games because they're the division rivals, but nobody had ever done that to any other division opponent, put 941 on them with the two games combined. So, and first matchup, the Ravens weren't missing all of their secondary like they were this time. They had some guys. So it wasn't all, you know, the injuries. That's why I'm saying I want to give Burrow his proper credit, too.
If they were to play a third time, he might go for 600. That's the trajectory he's on.
Right. If the Ravens find a way to make it into the playoffs and they have to face the Bengals and they still don't have their guys back, look out. Burrow might actually go for 7. It was incredible. And I'm not going to hold that game necessarily against the Ravens because of the injuries. I'm not going to hold this season against the Ravens because of the injuries. But it's not looking good for Baltimore. I think they're I can see them fizzling down the drain and losing the last two and finding their way out of the playoffs altogether, which would be a shame.
The Bengals?
The Ravens, I meant. I'm sorry.
The Ravens, because I think the Bengals pretty much need one win. That they need to win one of these last two games, and they've got that division sewn up. Because they get the only other team that could possibly get to 10 with them would be Baltimore and Cincinnati, by virtue of, you know, owning them completely twice, has that tiebreaker. So, yeah, so obviously Cincinnati's going to have kind of a, you know, tough road to hoe this weekend playing Kansas City. You know, but they win that, they're in. But then they get Cleveland in week 17. And, yeah, I mean, the way this is shaping up, that division's not over, but that division's kind of over.
It looks like it's kind of over, yeah. So that was one message sent last week. Another one, obviously, was the Buffalo Bills.
Yeah, that's where I was going to go to. So I'm glad you went there, because that's immediately where I was at. Don't forget about us. That's what they said.
Wait a minute. We're not dead, yeah.
I feel better.
They rose up out of the grave, and the Patriots were ready to put them down and reclaim their crown atop the AFC East and the Bills. I tell you what an effort by the Buffalo Bills. This was a game I was lucky enough to watch the whole thing, and that's one of the strongest team efforts that I've seen in a long time. You credit Sean McDermott, credit the players for knowing what was at stake and coming out. The Patriots tried. They pulled out their tricks. They had end arounds and reverses and flea flickers, and New England was doing all that they could. They were pulling out all the usual tricks that they have when they have a big game like this, and the Bills were having none of it. They brought every bit of effort. They absolutely were punishing the Patriots pass rush wise. They were beating up Mac Jones. New England had some success running the ball. They had three touchdowns out of their running back, but it wasn't easy. Nothing the Patriots got came easy, and the Bills had chances to answer every time the Patriots did something, and the Bills had the answer. Josh Allen played like a champion. He had the poise. He had the big plays. He had the running when he needed to. I can't say enough about the effort that the Bills put forth in this game, fought their way back, could have laid down, had, you know, chances to give up the lead when the Patriots were mounting their comeback, and they said, no, we are not losing this game. Whatever happens, we're going to go out and win this thing and do all that we can to win it. Isaiah McKenzie with an MVP effort at wide receiver, just making unbelievable catches. And the routine catches, moving the sticks, really did everything that the Bills could have possibly asked him to do. And New England had a last stand in the goal area where they could have scored a touchdown on their last possession, but the defense had a last stand, but Josh Allen came through, got a read option, flipped a touchdown to Dawson Knox, the tight end. New England couldn't touch Buffalo in that game. The way the Bills played, it wasn't perfect, but it was determined. They improvised when they had to as well. They really pulled out all the stops. And the only thing that it put in my mind was, God, why can't they do this all the time? Why can't Buffalo, why can't they play like this against the teams that aren't so such a rival or aren't such a strong opponent? They really pulled out a great effort when they needed to, but if they played like this against Jacksonville, for example, they wouldn't have to rally back and beat New England to take the division back.
You watch the Bills in the game like they played against New England and go, how is this team 8-6? Because I honestly think they were bored. They remind me of a later season version of what we would get out of the Chiefs, you know. Were the Chiefs just weren't challenged, and you just knew that the talent, even maybe some of the current version of the Chiefs, although they've been really playing up to their, you know, more up to their fuller potential, but I still don't think that offense of Kansas City's looks like it is on all cylinders, even though they're like, what, the fourth rated or third rated offense, which is crazy to say that they're off and they're doing that well. But Buffalo's that should be at that same level. You know, Buffalo gets to the AFC championship game last year. Everybody's got them ascending. I had them in the Super Bowl this year. I was really all over Buffalo going in, and they kept laying these eggs. And, you know, did we disagreed on this one?
Let me bring that up.
I think this
I know
one
I had
ones,
New England. Yeah, we did.
Yeah, I had Buffalo because I was, yeah. You know, we talked at pretty good lengths on that pick about, you know, believing in Buffalo, and my thinking was that, you know, they're just the better team, even though they haven't necessarily played that way up to this point. Plus, I believe they were a little embarrassed coming out of that three-pass performance by Mac Jones in a game that the Bills found a way to somehow lose.
Sure.
And they showed up, and they performed as the better team, and they played two pretty easy games here to finish out the schedule. So they needed that. They had to get back the control. Now we know that the Bills, right? Well, they lost to the Jags. So yes, mm-hmm. anything is possible. The Bills could show up small in one of these last two games. I believe it's Atlanta. And then the Jets, at home,
yeah.
Both of those games in Buffalo. I mean, if they lose one of those two games and somehow crap away the division, that's on them.
They don't deserve it, right.
They don't deserve it. But this last week, they did exactly what they needed to take the control back to at least get that home game in the first round. That's what they did what they had to do.
They did. From the opening snap, they did everything they could do. The defense took the field first against New England, and they came hard at the Patriots immediately. The first run that the Patriots had, the Bills, you could just tell that they were – this is a different Buffalo Bills team, that they had a mindset. They absolutely were not going to be denied in this game. They blitzed Mac Jones and took him down on third down to end the first drive on a three and out. And it's like, okay, well, they're here. the Bills are here to play. And if they managed to lose that game coming out hot like that, I think that would have also been very telling, because I was really paying attention to that too. You can come out hot as hell. We've seen that many times over the years. A team comes out of the locker room all fired up and full of piss and vinegar. And takes it to their opponent for, you know, a quarter or a half. And then second half comes and the other team says, okay, well, that was nice. And then they do what they have to do to take down that opponent that has so much fire, and they just couldn't sustain it. And I honestly was expecting that to happen in the second half, and it didn't. The Bills maintained that intensity. They maintained that effort all the way through and came all the way to the end. And the Patriots tried like hell to come back and take that game, and the Bills would not allow it. They took what the New England defense gave them. There was some luck involved. Mac Jones had a throw that was tipped twice in the air and picked off by Micah Hyde at one point. But it was mostly about the Bills and their effort, and it was one of the most impressive efforts, just pure effort that I saw out of a team all year. And like I said, the takeaway for me is, damn, why can't they do that all the time? If they did, they'd
yeah.
be one of the best teams in the league without any question, without any argument.
And I know we disagreed about it at the time, but if we go into the playoffs and Buffalo does make a run, I'm still going to point to that second half against Tampa as sort of that turning point for their season, you know, where they were getting pretty much housed by any good team they played. But they do find a way to come all the way back and force overtime against Tampa, even though they end up losing ultimately. That was that game where we were like, you got to, you know, you don't have to win, but show us something. Just do something, Buffalo. And they did. And, you know, then they turn around the next week and they destroy a team they should. And then they get the game against the sort of revenge game against New England. And they look good. And you know, they can win a couple of cream puff games here and get that first round home playoff game. Maybe the Bills have gotten it right. You know, maybe they can be a dangerous team going into the playoffs again.
Well, the world's biggest Bills fan, Hipster Jay, fell back in love with them, and you got it right last week, and you got it right the week before. So you see them rebounding off of that Tampa win and sort of springboarding and making a long run, and you're on record. You're on them. You love them again when everyone else fell out of love with them. There was Hipster Jay right there saying, hey, those are my guys. So you own them. They're yours.
I just don't know how to quit them. speaking of impressive, how about the Chargers? Oh.
Well. I don't even know how to
how do you
get
unpack?
Whacked.
You did that? You let General Mills do? Oh my God. Rex Burkhead? Oh.
General Mills lighting you up is bad enough, but that was the one that stuck out to me. It was 149 on the ground to Rex Burkhead.
Imagine,
retired.
Neither one of us could actually imagine this, but imagine being a Chargers fan.
Yeah, no, I can't imagine that.
Oh,
imagine being an LA Clippers fan. We call them the Clippers for a reason. Second team, second effort,
Clipper
second
Chargers. Yeah.
Second best all the time, just always coming up short. It's probably the exact same feeling as being an LA Clippers fan. So I assume there's a lot of Clippers fans who probably just fall in love with the Chargers when they move there just because this is my team. I recognize them. No world championships ever, and yeah, same feeling. Really is.
The Texans, they get up, and they're doing a good job, and they're staying up, but it always, you have this with these really bad teams. You always have that feeling like, well, it's not going to last, and they're going to collapse, and you know, and then the Chargers make their comeback, and then, you know, they get that to a 4-point game, you know, they with 6 minutes left to go, and they let the Texans score two more touchdowns. Oh.
Yeah, the real big problem that we talked
about. Put the pick six in there to just, you know, put the cherry on
the
seal Sunday deal. Right there, yeah.
The biggest problem for the Chargers that we've always talked about all year is that run defense, and I think that's what really came. Like you can make all the comebacks you want, but if you're going to turn right back around and let Rex Burkhead open you up again, I mean, there's not much you can really do. So if I was still doing you know, Survivor pool, if I had lasted that long, that's probably my 16-point game in a confidence pool. That's probably my Survivor pick, you know, at Houston. You know, nice, easy, soft landing for the Chargers. That division of theirs is pretty tough, and they get a chance to get out of that division and take on maybe one of the three worst teams in the league, you know, three or four, along with the Lions and Jets and Jaguars. It's got to be the Texans, and they didn't just not cover the spread. They lost by double digits to the Houston Texans. There's no excuse for that early. Is your headphone plug half out? Because you are breaking up extremely bad. I mean, I can't make out a thing you're saying. I hope that's not something on my end. Rep, are you there? Now I don't hear anything. We've had some interesting issues with the sound the last few weeks on Blog Talk Radio. So hopefully this is a temporary issue for Jay to get himself situated. And hopefully he'll make it back on shortly. Sometimes with those things, you might have to come on and come back off, unfortunately. I don't know if he can hear me or not. But yeah, that was definitely a shocking result, and I'm definitely going to need him back on soon because I have a ruling that I need him to make on one of my picks that I don't feel comfortable making the ruling because it's one of my own picks. So I'm going to need him to come in and make that decision because I don't think I should make it. Yeah, looking at the rest of Week 16, we had the Saturday night affairs with the Browns and the Packers, and then the Colts and the Cardinals. A couple of interesting games. Jay's coming back on the phone line here.
Hey, I made it back.
All right. Something was wrong on your end with the computer?
Yeah, my internet just completely went out here.
Yeah, you guys are having lovely Midwest weather
up
there.
No, there's nothing going on here weather-wise. It's just cold. But you said that you said that you could hear you, I was breaking up, and then all of a sudden I look and I'm getting all these reloading errors, and then I get this little error symbol on the bottom of my computer, and it just goes to no internet.
Okay.
I don't usually get these. I get these a lot during the daytimes, but I don't get these too much at night. So, yeah, everything for me right now, all up on my screens, is all down. So all of my recap info or any of that, scores, everything, you know. So I pretty much have nothing, so I have no dashboard anymore to look at. But, no, I was trying to make the point about, you know, not being smart enough to put a contingency on that Cleveland-Green Bay game because I just assumed Baker wasn't going to play. And then when I saw he was playing, I wasn't smart enough to just audible my pick because I had a feeling that they would compete in that game if Baker was there, which I said they would when we made the pick. And, of course, they did. And you played good enough to win, but you miss one of those early extra points, and then you're always chasing that point for the whole rest of the game, and they end up losing by two.
Yeah, they didn't have much trouble moving the ball on the Packers defense.
Yeah. Packers had no answer for Nick Chubb.
Right. It was when Baker tried to throw, it was when all hell would break loose.
Yeah, so the Packers had an answer for Baker.
Yeah.
The answer was four interceptions and still only
answer
was
just
two.
Stand there and wait for him to throw you the football.
Yeah. When the balls are flying your way, that's a good defensive strategy.
It is. And a key third down in that game before that last touchdown by Cleveland that covered the number, it was a called run on third and 10. And I've just pointed out and once again reinforced, they just not going to trust Baker Mayfield. They were just not going to let him handle that comeback. Eventually, they're just like, okay, we're just going to keep running, and that's how we're going to make our comeback, and that's what wound up working for them. God, it's just so obvious that the Browns are trying to win despite their quarterback, and I don't know how far you can possibly get with that. They got to a cover on the Packers, so good on them. We both lost that pick. I'm a little worried about the Packers defense looking they haven't looked so hot the last few games. I was surprised that the Browns were able to move the ball on Green Bay the way they were because, you know, 219 yards on the ground. You got to know that they're focusing on the ground game because their quarterback is Baker Mayfield, and yet the Packers didn't seem to have any answers.
Well, and they've been banged up defensively. They've been missing the Smiths. They've been missing Jaire Alexander. They had a game. I don't know if they were still missing, but Kenny Clark's been banged up. So they've been missing some big pieces. They're starting to get these guys back. So I expect their defense to be in better shape as we get closer to the playoffs and into the playoff time. So I think what it really stresses for Green Bay is how important hanging on to that number one seed is going to be for them.
Yeah.
They need to play these next two games as playoff games more than anything else because I think them with these defensive guys trying to work back from injuries is they really – I mean, we could say every team needs the bye, really need that bye. You got the home field advantage of teams having to come up to Green Bay in January, and then you pile on top of that the defensive guys all starting to come back and work their way back from these injuries. They definitely have to be in playoff mode right now. And, I mean, they've got the Vikings and the Lions here these last two games. So you'd think they'd hold serve, but anything is possible.
And they get the gift of, you know, half the Vikings. They don't have the full Vikings team because of Kirk Cousins getting the goop. It's amazing that the importance of getting the number one seed and having the playoffs run through Lambeau Field as greatly important as it is to have that home field advantage. You're right. It's probably more important that they get the number one seed just to have that week where they don't have to play any football and their defense can rest up and Aaron Rodgers can rest up that foot. And that's probably more important for the Packers than just getting the home field. But the home field is obviously very, very important for them as well.
Right.
In the Saturday night game with the Colts and the Cardinals, that wasn't.
I'm going to attempt to connect back on the computer here.
Okay.
Everything seems to be back up here. So I'll be right back.
Yeah, Jay's going to get back on the up. Oh, there goes the phone dropping, and he's going to try to get back on the computer. Now, I had his original computer connection still up here. I don't know if that will work for him with the internet going out, or if he's going to have to try with a whole different connection. Probably going to have to just come in brand new. Yep, there he is. All right, can you hear me? No, that didn't work. Might have to be... I heard a click. Are you there? I don't know if you can hear me. Might have to try a different browser. Like if you got Chrome and Firefox and all that.
Hello.
There you go. Yeah. There you are.
Yeah, helps if I actually turn the headphones on.
Oh. I'm going through all these different connections. Because
when I switch to the phone, I put that, you know, I turn the headphones off and put them away. And then when I picked up the headphones and put them on, I dialed in, but I didn't turn them on.
Ah, there you go.
So I'm back. Everything here seems to be up and running again.
Good.
So
I've definitely had some internet flashes myself the last week or so.
Yeah, we wouldn't know how to do this show without technical difficulties. That's why we both, I believe, were pining for IT jobs with Blog Talk Radio. Call us, guys.
We're qualified. We've definitely been
through enough that we could probably qualify as tech support now.
In our ninth season, and every year has its challenges. Just go back and listen. Believe me, there's some shows that are unlistenable because of how bad some of the connections were. But hopefully, I think a lot of that was my old computer, honestly. And now that I got the new one, hopefully we won't have that.
Yeah, the actual fidelity of our conversation, like the quality seems to be fine. It's just the connecting has been a little tricky. But no, this was completely on my end because my internet completely crashed. Yeah, I got that little connected logo down in the corner on my Windows screen. And if it goes to this little globe symbol, that's like, it went there. And
I'm very familiar.
But, yeah. thanks, Spectrum.
It could happen a lot worse. That's all I'll say. It could be much worse.
Yes, we should be grateful because it is the miracle of the internet and this technology that allows us to do this show.
Yes, at all. This is true. I was going to move on to the Colts-Cardinals game later Saturday on Christmas.
That was one that the Cardinals fade is in full effect.
Oh, yeah. And I was not really surprised at all the way this one turned out, that the Cardinals are going to keep fighting and keep putting forth good effort. They're just not going to have enough at the end because they're just not clicking on all cylinders. They're just they're discombobulated. They're deep on both sides, offense and defense. And I'm not saying that they're complete trash on either side. I'm saying that you can see there's elements there where they're just off. They're just a little off. Don't quite have the communication that they're supposed to have. They're just not on the same page. And in this game, second straight day on Christmas that we got to see a team try to win despite their quarterback and not because of him with the Colts. And they were able to actually get it done, I think because of the Cardinals, because the Cardinals are just not in sync right now.
Yeah. Well, you know, I saw a stat today, and then we can just, you know, we could go Raheem Morris here, and stats are for losers, right? but since week four, Carson Wentz is the fourth highest rated quarterback in football.
Okay.
he was apparently, through the first 3 weeks, he was so terrible. He was the 27th ranked quarterback through the first 3 weeks. If you take those first 3 weeks out, and you just look at his body of work since week four, he's the fourth highest rated quarterback in football.
And you know what that reminds me of is what the 49ers are doing with Janine Garoppolo.
Yeah.
Because I think both the Colts and the 49ers got to a point where they said, we need to start calling pass plays only when we really need to. That's how you get a high passer rating is you just limit the
right.
number of times that you ask your quarterback to actually throw the football, and you try to make those times as successful as possible, make them
no-brainer
as possible.
Or you throw when you shouldn't throw, right? Like you throw on first downs, you know, you put your quarterback in situations where he doesn't have to face a ton of pressure. You know, they have a really good running game, so he's not facing a lot of third and 14s. So, yeah, he's definitely running a good system. I would definitely say Carson Wentz qualifies as a system quarterback this year, but he's improving with each week because we know he can do stupid stuff. I mean, look at that Tennessee game with the, like, the left-handed lob out of his own end zone.
Gosh.
You know, one of the funniest, if not worst, plays of the year overall. We know that he's got that in him, but they feel like each week they're getting, you know, everything's rounding into shape a little bit better, but it all hinges on Jonathan Taylor. And he did what he was supposed to do. He got another 100 yards. It wasn't sexy, you know. He had a nice big run, but he put in a lot of work and did enough so that Carson Wentz could play a clean game.
First play out of the gate for the Cards when they got the football, Jonathan Taylor, 47 yards, right out the gate.
Yeah, that'll do it.
It's disgusting how good he is right now.
Yeah.
And that sets up the entire game plan. Now, even if you came into the game thinking, Jonathan Taylor, he might be a little overrated. So I'm not saying the Cardinals did that. But even if you did, right off the bat, now first run, 47, now you got to be on high alert the entire game. That lets Carson Wentz do whatever he could possibly want to do if you want to go that route. But Carson Wentz did stupid stuff in this game. He wasn't very good. He had one play where no defender was touching him on fourth down, and he still faded off of 1 foot and threw a very poor pass.
Turned
it over on downs. He had another check down throw to Taylor, who had, he had plenty of room, and he threw the ball way too high. Wentz is just not very good.
He's not playing at that drizzling shits level or least valuable player level like he played last year. Last year, I mean, 16 touchdowns, 15 picks. That's, that might have been good in the 70s, but that's not good now. 25
he's in the Hall of Fame in the 50s.
25 and 6 right now is respectable. I'm not sitting here singing the praises of Carson Wentz, but they're not losing games because of him right now. You know what I mean? He's not costing them anything. He's doing what he needs to do, and he's fitting in with this offense. I think he's doing exactly what they want him to do. He's playing efficient. He's got a good quarterback rating. He's not throwing a lot of picks. He's making bad decisions. Yes, but those bad decisions aren't ending up in the arms of defenders.
So far, which is a good thing.
Yes.
He was not very good in this game. He had some big throws. The put-away touchdown to put him up 22-13, scrambled on third down and bought just enough time to find Desmond Patman streaking across the back of the end zone, 14-yard throw. Hey, great throw. Great play. Give him credit for that. You know, overall, but he did have some really big plays. And then Kyler Murray on the other side, just I don't know what's going on there, but he did not look right.
I think he's missing Nuke. Maybe we aren't stating enough how much that offense misses DeAndre Hopkins right now.
No, it's huge. That when you talk about one of the best receivers in the league, and the magic that they were making when the season started, and now you take him off the page, you don't have him as an option. Now, what made me look at the Cardinals like, oh man, they might be really, really special early in the season was how many other weapons they seem to have. They had a lot of depth there. I saw some sparks out of AJ Green and Christian Kirk.
Yep.
They added Zach Ertz midseason, and it's like, wow, they really got a lot of depth there. They got a lot of playmakers. Well, everything is just kind of off right now. Maybe it's just because of Nuke Hopkins throwing everything off, but they're not all on the same page. And Kyler had some scared throws while fading back. He had pressure in his face. He had you know, guys, the ball's just coming up short, just falling dead in front of receivers because he didn't get enough on it because he was too scared to step up and make those throws because they had too many guys coming at him. And that's another big problem that the Cardinals are having right now is their O-line sucks. They kept giving up pressure all over the place. They had holding penalties. They had false starts by like half the line at one point. They were playing like pretenders. You talk about contender, pretender, real fake. The Cards are right now playing like they're fake, and they might turn out to be fake. They might turn it around still. And I've talked about that. We've seen so many teams that kind of have that surprise great start to the season. Some of them have a step back, a fade back for maybe a couple games. And, okay, well, we're better than this, and they turn it around and go on a run. And other teams step back and keep stepping back and keep falling all the way down. And that's what the Cardinals look like they're on the road to doing right now.
Yeah, and the chances are really good. I mean, they're locked into the playoffs right now. They're looking like I would suspect the five. You know, they've got a two-game lead over the two teams that are sitting there for the – 6 and 7 spots. So let's, you know, Arizona wins one more out of these last two games. They're going to be at least the five, maybe, you know, six if they, but they, but the more pressing thing is they crapped away a division that they had in the bag.
Yeah.
And the Rams, who were looking like, you know, they wouldn't go away. The Rams had that sort of mid-season hiccup where Stafford wasn't playing great. We really weren't quite sure what to make out of the Rams. Well, the Rams go, they beat them, and now the Cardinals, they're just losing to everybody now. And the Rams are starting to round out, and now the Cardinals are going to have to, you know, go on the road and play somebody tough, it looks like, in the first round.
Yeah, no surprise, Minnesota coming up short without Dalvin Cook.
That was my lock of the week.
Losing to the Rams, yeah.
And I give them credit, they tried.
Yeah.
You know, they hung around. Obviously, the coach didn't think too much of it, but then he, you know, loses his quarterback for this game. But yeah, no, the Vikings without Dalvin Cook are a completely different team.
Definitely.
I mean, I like Stafford, Alexander Mattison. I'm not the sole member of the fan club. I think he's a good backup, change of pace, give Dalvin Cook a breather type running back, but he's not a workhorse. He's not somebody who you're going to roll out there every week and have him be the guy.
I like Mattison too. He's not Dalvin Cook. It's just that simple.
The Rams discovered a running game for a week.
They did. They go for 159 as a team.
The ghost of Sony Michel showed up.
I was kind of worrying or thinking about that being a big trade when they made it. It went under the radar, but I was like, you know, Sony Michel showed some stuff in New England, and this might be a big deal. And it turns out that they need him. They have absolutely needed him. And Stafford and Cousins both, you know, swapping INTs during this game, so both of them were kind of shaky.
This wasn't my strongest lock. I will say that. I'll fully admit that.
But ultimately, the Rams come up and do what you got to do against a team that's, you know, decimated like that. So I need a ruling from you. I have a situation with one of my picks. I'm going to need you to. Decided that I shouldn't be the one to make the decision on what should happen on this. So whether you want to or not, you're going to have to make the decision.
Okay.
And you can do it now. You can ruminate on it, whatever you want to do. But what wound up happening was in the Chiefs Steelers game, I said on the podcast that I had a contingency on it. And I said that I was going to take the Steelers if either Kelce or Hill were going to be ruled out for that game. They both had the goop, but they both had a chance to be cleared. Then on the write-up for the blog after the show was over, oblivious to what I had said on the show, I said that I'm going to take the Chiefs if either one of them get cleared for the game, which is the opposite of what I said on the podcast. So the ruling that you have to make is, are we going by what I said first on the podcast? Are we going by what I wrote on the blog? Or are we throwing the game out completely, treating it like a push? Whichever way you think is the fairest to go, I'm going to go with your ruling because I shouldn't make that ruling.
My natural tendency would be to go with what you said on the show when we made the pick.
Okay.
Because that's us making the pick.
Right.
Typing it up after the show, that's what I would consider as the mistake, I'm guessing.
Yeah, I completely forgot what I said on the podcast.
So then you had to check the tape, and you're like, oh.
Yeah, when I went back and listened again, I was like, oh, man, yeah.
So, no, okay. Because if that's the pick you made with me on the show and you didn't change it as far as, like, you know, audibling like you did with the Bears, which is a funny story because when you switched it and you said that because Foles was starting, I was half tempted to switch my pick to the Bears. But I didn't. Yeah, it was another one where I should have switched back because I actually had a feeling like I'm probably better with Foles in that spot just because of how bad the Legion of Room is. My understanding when you made the pick was that if either one of them wasn't playing, you didn't like Kansas City.
Yeah, that's what I said.
So that was what I didn't even know there was a mistake on the write up. So that's news to me.
I didn't know until after I listened.
In my head all week, we both lost that pick.
Well, that's okay. That's the ruling. That's what I'll make it.
Okay.
So that put me at 6-10 for the week, and you at 7-9. I read it after I wrote it up, and I said, "Is that what I said on the podcast?" I honestly didn't remember. So that's when I went back and listened. I was like, "Oh shoot, okay." All right, that's fair. I'm glad I asked you to make that ruling and didn't do it on my own because I probably would have given myself. I don't know if I would have given myself the pick or if I would have just made it a push.
I think the lesson there is less confusing contingencies. When you confuse yourself with your own contingencies, you get what you deserve.
Lesson taken. Point well taken.
It's like trying to pick games 2 weeks in advance.
Well, I used to be a proponent of that a lot. I used to do that a lot, and yes. I definitely have peeled off on that because that definitely doesn't.
Any thoughts on your boy Nick Foles there leading the Bears to a comeback win in Seattle? That means nothing for either team.
Yeah, that's my thought. Is Nick Foles really okay? Whatever.
he's a veteran, you know, backup level quarterback. He's capable of doing something like that, but that's a game that Seattle is up 10 going into the fourth quarter and just craps away.
And not only that, they were up 7 and driving at the Bears 10-yard line, I believe it's at one point when Russ took a sack and then Jake Myers hooked the field goal. So you talk about just giving a game away. Like they
in the
really
snow,
had that thing. Yeah.
Which was just, everything about that game was weird. You know, Seattle discovers a running game, go figure, and then still finds a way to lose that game.
And Matt Nagy,
that whole thing's blowing up, right? That Seattle's got to be. I mean, Pete Carroll probably done. Would you figure?
Yeah, I would figure.
I mean, Russell Wilson might be gone. I mean, they got to figure this thing out.
Yeah, that does seem to have run its course. But nothing has run its course more than Matt Nagy in Chicago, and he's still there.
No.
So I don't know. You know, it's completely up to the ownership if they want to actually make that move. Nagy being the gambler guy and going for two for the win, and it actually worked out. Like nothing about that game was.
Now here we both lost this
sense.
Pick.
Yeah.
Here is where I have no problem with Nagy doing that. Like maybe I have crapped on John Harbaugh. This game meant nothing.
The season means nothing.
This meant nothing. Just go for it and get out of Dodge and don't punish those fans in Seattle with overtime. You're not playing for anything. Where with Baltimore, even if Baltimore splits those two games going to overtime, right? And you know, they have those two games, they go to overtime. Maybe they win one out of those two and they are in a much better spot here with the playoffs on the line and still hanging with Cincinnati, who now, again, has complete control of that division.
Crazy.
Just saying. I'm not opposed to gambling and going for it. I'm opposed to teams that do it excessively. I'm opposed to teams that do it way too early in games. I mean, there's a whole lot of situational football that coaches just seem to have forgotten about. But what the Bears did, I got no problem with that. Just get out of it. Just end that. You know, that's like a mercy killing at that point.
I had no problem with it either. I've just kind of shrugging my shoulders because it's like, really? That's when they decide to be successful and creative? Okay, fine.
Yeah.
Apparently
Jalen Hurts' ankle is okay. So there's a medical update.
Yeah, he's been on the fence as far as going this week, but I didn't think there was much of a doubt that he was going to be the quarterback.
And last week, though, no problems there either.
Yeah.
Blowing out the Giants. That was wow.
That was shame on us for trusting Joe Judge and Jake Fromm
Man.
Or Mike Glennon or whoever was going to be the quarterback. That was definitely the wrong move there.
I still don't fully trust
Philly.
No, but you've got these teams that are sort of making these little bit of late season surges, right? You've got Miami, who has completely bum-slayed their way into the playoffs at this point, which is, oh, God.
That game was sad Monday.
Oh. How do you? What was that?
That was a kid that was not ready to play.
Shame on us for trusting a Notre Dame quarterback.
Right.
But I don't know, is that necessarily an anti-New Orleans pick for us, or is that an anti-Miami pick? Because that you want to talk about real or fake.
Yeah,
Miami's got to be the fakest team in football.
I had no idea what book was going to play. Like, I don't have any recollection of his Notre Dame greatness or anything. No, that wasn't about how great Ian Book was going to be. I thought, you know, Alvin Kamara was still the best player on the field, and I was going
they
with.
Him up.
Oh, they did. The Miami. That's how they won the game. Is they made Alvin Kamara a non-factor. They committed completely to stopping him, and they said, "Whoever this kid is, we're going to dare him to beat us." And he didn't beat him.
No, it wasn't like Miami exactly. Yeah, the Dolphins didn't set the world on fire in that game.
No, because they're not nearly as good as the seven game. What is it, seven in a row that they won now?
Yeah.
So they started, 1-7?
1-7.
And now they're 8-7.
Now they're in the playoffs. If it started
playoffs.
Right now. Yeah, Miami would be your 7th seed right now if the playoffs started. We would our first week playoff game, our Saturday
playoffs.
Afternoon game, our Saturday afternoon Miami at Tennessee. Yeah, that would be your Saturday afternoon. Guaranteed, that's a Saturday afternoon game.
Oh,
if that crap happens.
No doubt. No doubt about that.
Nobody is going to watch that game.
No, the Dolphins D took full advantage of their matchup, and you can't take anything away from that. They definitely neutralized Kamara and dared Book to beat him, and that was one of the worst first-time starts I think I've ever seen. Because it would be one thing if
by a non-wide receiver.
It would be one thing if he came out and tried to gunsling, like, okay, this is my big shot. I'm going to go out here and just throw it around, and kept getting picked off and whatnot. He couldn't get any throws off. He was just so scared to throw because every time the Dolphins got in his face, he was just like, nah, he had no idea what to do and just started running around out there. And it was bad.
Yeah, there was.
It was really bad.
Just looking at the rest of the games here, we didn't really – Atlanta got backdoored. But they won, so yeah, good for them. Jets beat Jacksonville. Nobody cares. Tampa did exactly what they should have done against Carolina. Like that Cam Newton thing is, oh, man. We got to talk about euthanasia. This Cam Newton experiment has got to die horribly.
Ghost Boy is back because they had enough of Cam.
Yeah, they decided they're going back to Ghost Boy. We played okay, all right, and, you know. When the game was out of hand.
As far as Tampa goes, I just want to bring up about, I've had this running thing throughout the years that I, every now and then I get on a rant about, I don't care about character. I don't care about guys. I don't care if you killed somebody. I don't care if you raped somebody.
Oh,
if you can help me win, I need you on my team. Like if I'm a coach or an owner or whatever, I need you. I need as many players that's going to help me win. Cause as a coach, if I don't win, I get fired and my family doesn't eat. So I don't give a fuck about any of this character, all this bullshit. No, if you can help me win, I don't care what you did off the field. I really don't. And the Antonio Brown situation is a perfect example because there's a lot of guys out there in the media that I've read that are very upset that Bruce Arians said, hey, when I bring in Antonio Brown, you know, last year, if he has one mess up, he's out of here. I'm just bringing him in, and we know his issues, and we know that he can be a problem, and I'm going to have zero tolerance. If he does one thing, you can't do too many things much worse than faking your vaccination card and lying to everybody and claiming that you're vaccinated. And guess what? There he is out there running routes and doing what he can do because he's Tom Brady's guy. And if Tom Brady says, you're on my team, you're on my team. And Bruce Arians knows his receiving corps decimated partially by COVID, partially by injury. He needed Antonio Brown. AB out there was about the best weapon that Tom Brady had by a mile. And he really needed him to contend and compete in that game. He's going to need him again this week, although he may not play because his ankle is acting up again. But my point is, enough of this character shit. I'm really tired. You know, the draft comes around and we start hearing about character and we start hearing about, well, this guy may have tried a joint when he was a junior in high school. And there, can we trust him? What about his fuck the character bullshit. Can he help me win? That's all this is all about. All of it.
Yeah.
That's just what I wanted to bring up about that.
The weed. You had the weed guy, right?
Yep.
You always had that. Well, remember even back
Laramie
when, like,
Tunsil was
Sapp?
The gas
remember
mask
Warren,
guy.
Oh, the gas mask. Yeah, Josh Allen was tweeting out rap lyrics.
Racist tweets. Yep.
Yeah.
It's always something about can we trust his character? Can he win? Can he play fucking football? That's all I care about.
No. So the answer to the AB question is yes. Yeah, he can play football. I mean, he's you know, he's a more clean and sober Josh Gordon. That's all he is.
Maybe more douchey, but okay.
Probably more of a nutcake. You know. But the frozen feet and Gruden, remember all that? I mean, that's the same guy.
Yeah. Same guy.
Washington, it'll be QD. Ooh. Pittsburgh is BQ. I think we put Pittsburgh to bed, right? Or well, did we say Pittsburgh was going to show up for that game?
Let's see. No, that was the one that I said I was going to take them because the
right.
The Chiefs are going to be missing Travis Kelce and or Tyreek Hill, but Kelce does not get cleared. Hill does, but is ineffective because he's still recovering from COVID. So he was out there almost as a decoy. And they didn't need him because Pat Mahomes just kicked some ass. Very focused, very efficient. It was like he knew he had to involve his other weapons because his guy is out there and not looking good and not getting his win. So he took it upon himself to play some more great football. You already pointed out the rankings of the Kansas City offense this year, and they're supposedly off, and they're right there near the top of the league still. Mahomes is playing much better than he was earlier in the year.
And Mahomes in that game, it's funny because we talk about Hill being ineffective and Kelce not out there. Mahomes in that game targets 10 different receivers in that game.
He took advantage of the guys that he had, and or maybe the Steelers are just that bad. I don't know.
Well,
I still can't quite
that
figure it out.
I mean, that game was so bad that Roethlisberger's like, I'm done. Because when he says something like he says before the game this week that this is probably his last game in Pittsburgh, I don't see him going anywhere else. Right? Nobody's going to. Nobody wants him. I mean, nobody's throwing the bag at Ben Roethlisberger. So I have a feeling he's retiring.
We don't think anyone wants him, but we've been surprised before. So, but I wouldn't think like any of the teams that have quarterback needs would take a chance on Big Ben. He's so limited, and it's like there's
right.
you know, there's only so much he can do for you. He can't really, you know, run a, you know, too many traditional offenses. You basically got to build your offense around him.
Yeah. The only place I could see him, this is going to sound strange, I don't want to throw out crazy, you know, conspiracy theory, but you can put me on tape if it does end up happening. We can
right, if it
out.
Happens, you're like, hey, I had it.
I could see him in Carolina.
Oh my God.
And only because there's always that prospect that you might get a healthy Christian McCaffrey for 5 weeks.
No, that's about all you can count on every year. But,
no.
Yeah.
If you're thinking about, you know, pairing him up with a team that plays paper champion defense and on paper has a good running game because they have one of the top three running backs in football, but he can never get on the field. I could see him going to his just being a stand up, you know, to do his Pittsburgh thing. But that's it. That's a short list. That's the only team I look at who needs a quarterback where I could see him going. And maybe they keep rolling with Darnold. Who knows?
You're right. Who knows with that? There's no telling what Matt Rhule's going to do down there. I don't even have a prediction on that.
Yeah, Darnold just gets a massive incomplete for this season, right? Looked good really early, then he fell apart, then he got hurt.
Right, just kind of throw your shoulders up. Well, I mean, I know what I think of him, but it's not really based on this year.
No.
It's based on all the Jets years.
Oh, yeah, he's bad.
Yes. I don't need to see any more, but that's just me.
So that, I believe, rounds out the week, unless there's any pressing games I'm missing. We didn't talk about Vegas and Denver, but
there's a reason. Pressing. It's because Vegas outgained the Broncos 361-171 and only won by four.
Yeah.
And could not, 17-13 when you have that big of a yardage. That kind of shows what's going on with Vegas right now, which is to say they're struggling. They put up some yardage, but they can't get in the end zone. Turnovers kept that one close, definitely. The only other thing I would have to say about last week is just an observation. I think the Dallas Cowboys are playing very good right now. I think they're peaking at the right time. Just saying.
I mean,
56-14.
I had them. I believe I had them to win that division.
Yes, you did. It was just. Something to chuckle at, that Joe Burrow puts up 299, I think, in the first half earlier in that day.
Yeah.
And Dak was like, okay, hold my beer, watch this, and goes 322 in the first half of the blowout victory on Sunday night. I thank the Cowboys for putting the potato skins to bed very early, because I got to turn that game off and not have to worry about football very early Sunday evening. Didn't have to watch the second half of that one at all. So.
Yeah. And the funny part is Dak finishes with 330.
That's called taking your foot off the gas.
Well, yes, that is a Mike McCarthy staple. But even Mike McCarthy can't blow a 42-7 lead.
Oh, but he'll try. But no, the Cowboys look like they're turning it around and look like they're going to be very formidable. So. There's some teams that are looking really good and some that are kind of struggling and trying to limp their way along. So we'll see how that lends to our picks for this week, which is not the end of the season. It normally would be week 17, but
the season that will never end
this week and then next week. And then the playoffs finally get started somewhere in the middle of January. To get the numbers out of the way officially, 6-10 for me, 7-9 for you. I hesitate to mention the streak that we're on with our locks because
you just jinxed it.
By mentioning it, I just mentioned it and I just jinxed it. But yeah, we haven't lost a lock, either one of us, in quite a long time. Going all the way back to, I lost in week 9 and you last lost in week 8. So we've been going crazy on our locks ever since then. No, I lost in week 12 as well. But yeah, you. When was your last loss?
All I know, well, all of my early week stuff was losses because I was down 4.
Yeah.
So I mean, you could put me away this week. You could end it. You're still up 1 with 2 to go.
Still up at 1.
Yeah.
Yeah. Week 8 was your last L. You've been perfect ever since on lock. So yeah, I'm definitely trying to jinx you. So we'll see how that turns out. So for the season, that puts me at 133-106 for a 556 percentage, and you're at 122-117 for a 510 percentage.
And both of those, yours is great and mine is good. So I mean, we're having good seasons. I mean, we're over the expert line by a lot. We're way over the Mariotti line.
Oh yeah. It has not been easy, but we've both been doing some real work and getting some of these. There's been some picks that we both have pulled out. And it's like, whoa, how do we? I go back to your 12-2 in week 14, and you know, I've been trying to just hang along with that the big numbers that I was putting up that I've fallen back a little bit. But yeah, we both have been putting in some work, so I think we should be very proud of our what we've done up to this point, and hopefully finish with a flourish.
I would say quietly combined, putting together one of our best probably combined seasons.
Yeah. So we'll see if we can keep it going. All 16 games in front of us for week 17, including a Sunday nighter and the last Monday nighter of the year. We will get to all that in a couple minutes. You are listening live to In Much Less Detail, the podcast. Not on the radio, but only here on the website, blogtalkradio.com/inmuchlessdetail. To be notified when we're live, you can follow the show on the Blog Talk Radio website, or you can follow my Twitter feed at IMLDDre when I tweet out when we're live before every show. Jason is on Twitter too. His feed is at IMLDJTG. Our show is available as a podcast where you get the live show and a special VIP after show. To listen to the show as a podcast, about an hour or so after the live show is over, come back to the show page and look through our archives, or subscribe on iTunes or any number of different podcasting apps, including Player.fm, Mixcloud, Blueberry, and the TuneIn Radio app. You'll get the whole show, the live show and the after show, downloaded straight to you. You can always send us a question or comment or shout out via email to the following email address, inmuchlessdetail@gmail.com. You can follow all of our picks on our blog. The website for the blog is inmuchlessdetail.blogspot.com. Our Thursday night picks will be available Thursday afternoon on our Twitter feeds. Again, that's at IMLDDre and at IMLDJTG. This copyrighted broadcast is a production of Jay and Me and is solely performed for our entertainment, as well as for any poor soul who happens to be listening. It is intended to be a football pick show for the private, non-commercial use of our audience. Any publication, reproduction, retransmission, or any other use of the descriptions and accounts of this podcast without the express written consent of Jay or me is strictly prohibited. A lot of playoff scenarios on the line in these Week 17 games. Not too many teams that have completely wrapped or clinched up anything. Some divisions have been clinched, but there's still a lot of playoff spots available. There's still seedings available up for grabs. So all these games that have playoff implications, we'll try to cover and see what the implications exactly are. Whatever they are, we will definitely have your picks for all the games tomorrow and Monday night starting right now. The LA Rams and the Baltimore Ravens first up tomorrow afternoon. And we know that Lamar Jackson is still gimping around. He tried to practice this week and it didn't go well, so they shut him down and pretty much immediately. Snoop Huntley is back. He's been cleared from the goop list, so he will get the start instead of having to send Josh Johnson out there, although Josh Johnson, again, did play pretty well. Hollywood Brown is sick, so he's questionable for tomorrow. The D is in tatters, as we've talked about, particularly the secondary. L.A. at 11-4, 6-2 on the road. Baltimore down to 8-7 now, 5-2 at home. The Rams take the NFC West if they win this game, and the Cards lose in Dallas. So that implication is on the line for the Rams, and the Ravens at this point are just trying to swim and keep their heads afloat and stay alive in the AFC playoff race. Rams are big 6-point favorites on the road at the Ravens.
I don't want to ever underestimate a team that is well coached and is also fighting for their playoff lives. I think the Ravens have some pride. I like Tyler Huntley. Kid's scrappy. He's going to fight. So the Ravens aren't going to just go down like dogs. I don't think this is going to be Matt Stafford putting up, 525 yards passing against the Ravens. It's that West Coast team heading east. It's going to be cold. It's going to be a little yucky. I'm going to take Baltimore and the number. Not a ton of confidence on this pick. I mean, this is a week after locking up the Rams. And, the Ravens getting embarrassed last week, but they are, I think, the more desperate team. I think they're going to play like it. I look for an effort similar to what they did hanging around with the Packers a few weeks ago. And I wouldn't be shocked if the Ravens, keep this under the six. I think they're going to go down. They're going to go down with a fight.
I like Huntley, too. Him being back at quarterback should help the Ravens' effort. I don't think it's going to help them overcome what Matt Stafford should do to the Baltimore secondary. It might not be 525. I think I'll agree with that. I don't think that's too hard to disagree with or too hard to agree with. He won't go for 525. If he goes for 350, that's a lot less than 525, but it's still 350.
Still good.
Yeah. If he does 350 and three TDs and lights up the Ravens, I don't think anyone should be too surprised at that. So I'm going to go with that outcome and that the Ravens won't be able to keep up. So I will take L.A. and give the six. Atlanta and Buffalo, I don't think the Falcons are they technically still in playoff contention at 7-8? Yeah, I guess they're right there.
I think they have a 2% chance, I believe. So you're saying there's a chance.
Yeah, they're only a game behind the Eagles and the Niners there. So they're still fighting. And the Bills, of course, at 9-6, looking much better than they were last week. They are in control of the AFC East now. And they will clinch they still can clinch a playoff berth just by winning and getting some other teams to lose. But they're right there. They are in the driver's seat for the division. Atlanta at 7-8, but 6-3 on the road. So the road warriors going up east, out of the dome and into the elements. The 9-6 Bills, 4-3 at home. At home, Atlanta is a big 14.5 point dog at the Bills.
That's a lot of points to give, but I'm going to do it. I think the Bills are rounding out into playoff form here. I don't really think Atlanta's going to show up and go up there, play in the cold and what I would expect to be not the most favorable conditions. I know they've been road warriors this year, but, I mean, that last game when they went out to San Francisco, they didn't really show up much there. Buffalo knows what they need to do, right? You got a bum slay for 2 weeks, and you are going to win the division and get a home game in the playoffs, which, again, a team like Buffalo, they need that. So I think Buffalo takes care of business here and dispatches the Falcons easily.
Well, back to the marshmallows for the Bills. They got their big big contest against the Patriots, the big revenge game, and they came through. And now they go back to the softness of their schedule. I don't know if I've ever seen a schedule like theirs, where it's all good teams or just complete crap. There's no in the middle that the Bills have been taking out. So I guess this pick comes down to, do you believe that the Bills, are back? And do you believe that they've turned around whatever was ailing them, which might be boredom, which might be, something else. No one really knows, but, Hipster Jay believes in his Bills and he's going to go with them and give the 14.5. So that's not a surprise. And they'll get, Cole Beasley and Gabriel Davis back from the goop list. And it might be really crazy conditions up there. There's, you know, the cold weather is one thing, but the forecast in Buffalo is for fog. Might have a fog bowl situation up there. Don't know how dense it's going to be. It might, you know, might not be that bad, but it might be. Don't really know. I guess I'm not with a whole lot of confidence in the Falcons, but I'm going to, I guess, not believe that the Bills are all the way out of whatever they were going through. Like, they turned it on for the Patriots because they kind of had to. Their backs were against the wall, and they, like I said, that was an incredible effort that I saw out of them last week, and I applaud them and hats off and can't take anything away from it. I just don't believe they're going to put that same effort forth against the Atlanta Falcons. The motivation isn't there. I don't think they're going to really gear themselves up like that. I'm sure they'll win the game, but 14.5, I don't see that. So we'll see if they prove me wrong. Philadelphia and Washington in the NFC East, all the way back in week 15, they played a couple weeks ago. That game was moved to Tuesday because of the goop situation with Washington, and the Eagles were able to hang on and win that one by 10 with Garrett Gilbert as the Washington quarterback. So that won't be the issue because Beer Man is back. But what is going on with the quarterbacks in the NFC East? Dak is fine, but Chico Rivera is talking about maybe using Kyle Allen and sitting Beer Man down.
Random Allen?
One of the Random Allens. You got in New York, you got the situation with the two quarterbacks that Joe Judge doesn't know which one to choose. You had Jalen Hurts briefly talked about maybe, hey, Minshew Mania had that great spot star. Maybe they should stick with him. A lot of uncertainty with the quarterbacks in that division. Don't know exactly why. Don't know if it's going to be Beer Man the entire game, Tyler Heineken, or if it's going to be Kyle Allen partially, maybe in and out. Don't know how that's going to go. But in any event, it will be the Eagles as the road favorite, as 4.5-point favorites at the Washington Potato Skins.
Washington had that stretch early in the season where their defense stunk, and then they started playing a little bit of defense. You started watching them climb, and now it's all evaporated, and they're back to being completely trash on defense. They give up a ton of points. They maybe if there's a strength, they're a little bit stout against the run, but a little bit stout against the run isn't going to be enough against the Eagles. I think the Eagles are kind of rolling. They're definitely the team with more momentum. I don't particularly like much of anything that Washington is doing. They seem to have lost the fight. The fight that was in them. They had a lot of it. They were really being kind of scrappy and hanging in there. And that seems to have all evaporated. And you get your soul crushed like you did last week by Dallas in an effort like that. I'll take the Eagles here.
They're both going to have running back issues. They're both going to be missing their starters. Miles Sanders broke his hand. He's out for the Eagles, and Jordan Howard has a stinger, so he might be compromised tomorrow. For Washington, Antonio Gibson is out because he's got the goop, so Jared Patterson will be the running back for Washington. Real good outing versus the Washington defense a couple weeks ago for Philadelphia. Can they do it again? Can they copy that? I think they could, but I guess I'm trusting Washington one more time, at least with the points. I still see something with Philadelphia. With a team like that, it's so obvious what their weakness is. You want to stop that running game and make Jalen Hurts throw. Same principle as a couple weeks ago when I took Washington as well. That, hey, Washington's got a decent run defense. It's not great, but it's pretty decent. And maybe they can stop Philadelphia from going for 200 and make Jalen Hurts throw and make a mistake. Didn't work the first time, but I'm going to go with it again this time. At Washington, maybe the home field advantage will work for them. So 3 for 3 so far, where we're going head-to-head on all these. So we were getting off to a hot start. Let's see how we feel about the Buccaneers and the Jets. Tampa at 11-4 and the Jets at 4-11. Tampa, have they clinched anything yet? they've clinched a playoff spot, looking to keep battling in that division. Trying to
No, they clinched the division too.
They clinched the division. I was reading the key wrong here. Y is for a division. X is for a playoff spot. So they've clinched the division. They're still fighting for a possible one seed because Green Bay is a game ahead of them. So they got to go out here and keep trying, but they've still got personnel issues. Antonio Brown's ankle, as I said, is a problem. He may not be able to play. Mike Evans should return from his hamstring injury, but it's a hammy. So, you know, definitely don't count on him to, you know, to come right back and be great. And they've got defensive issues. JPP, Shaq Barrett are both out, along with those other defenders that got hurt a few weeks ago and got put on IR. So they're still the champs, and they still have the same roster from last year, but a lot of those guys are hurt and not playing right now. Jay Crowder has a calf, and he's doubtful for the Jets on the other side. Tampa, big favorites, of course, playing in New York. They are minus 13 at the Jets.
Yeah, as much as it pains me for a team as beat up as the Bucks to give that many points on the road, it's the Jets. They're really bad. Yes, they beat the Jags. They haven't really hung around much with too many teams this year. This team has gotten rolled up by some superior opponents with ease. I think Tampa Bay shows up and does enough. There's still enough remnant of the Super Bowl winning team that they were to easily handle a team like the Jets.
I'm going to concur on that. Yeah, don't let Zach Wilson showing out on the Jaguars influence your projecting what he does against the champs. I don't know if he's going to have the same success. He had a great run there. That touchdown run was
gutsy and athletic. That was a highlight. That was highlight worthy, for sure.
Now, is he going to do that to Tampa? I wouldn't bet on it. So I'm going to. It's a lot of points, and Tampa's missing a lot of guys. So I don't feel great about it. But I'm going to go with Tampa as well and give the 13.
Yeah, Tampa would need to be missing a lot more guys. Like their plane would need to crash.
if their quarterback was missing, that would be cause for concern. But Tom
yes,
still
if this was Blaine Gabbert, I don't think this would be a 13-point spread. Going out on a limb there.
I concur with that. The other New York team has the same record, 4-11. They're just as pathetic as the Jets, probably. They are on the road at the 5-10 Chicago Bears. So pathetic versus pathetic. Don't know how you have a whole lot of confidence in either one of these sides. But the Giants are big 6-point underdogs at the Bears.
I'm just taking the Giants here on a points play because I cannot trust the Bears as a 6-point favorite against anybody. I mean, I get it. I mean, is this Nick Foles, I'm guessing, again? You know?
It's Red Rifle. He's back under center.
Oh, geez. And I definitely like the Giants. I love the Giants even more. I should be locking this up, but I'm not. It's QB1. No, thank you. I want nothing to do with this. I'll take the Bears by a field goal, and that's the most I would trust them here.
This is tough because you got one principle of it's the Giants with the two quarterback thing, and as we know, two quarterbacks equals no quarterbacks.
No quarterbacks, yes.
But then it's the Bears, and it's Red Rifle, and it's Matt Nagy, who should be out of a job already, and God, you talk about both sides are sides you don't want to like. Yeah, Justin Fields' ankle is still an issue. I think it's one of those, just to add to the weirdness, I think he's back. Like, I think Justin Fields is going to be the number two quarterback. I think he's going to be active, but Red Rifle is definitely going to start. So I don't know. You know, Justin Fields, I keep calling him Josh. Justin Fields, if he's the starter, he can play, he should be starting. But if he can't go, then deactivate him, you know? Don't make him the backup. Because, you know, that almost guarantees that the Red Rifle gets hurt and then Justin Fields has to go out there and play anyway. But
so now that we've gotten to this point of the season here and we've seen these teams, the Bears, I've got to be I'm more perplexed by the Dalton signing now. Just by the fact that why wasn't this just Foles and Fields all season? I don't get it.
I don't know. I don't get it either.
All right.
And they made such a big deal out of Dalton being the
QB1. Yeah.
Like, really?
Yeah, it just perplexes me. You know, and then Foles gets a spot start, goes up to Seattle and wins again. He should have been the guy at Cleveland. He should have been the guy taking all the hits. You didn't need to spend any money on Andy Dalton. You could have spent that money on other players that you needed at positions, you know, to upgrade it. Hey, maybe go get a decent wide receiver. You could get a wide receiver for what you paid Andy Dalton. You'd probably get two of them.
Which is why I'm just as done with Ryan Pates as I am with Matt Nagy. I'm done with both of them.
It's a combo meal.
Yes. I can throw both of them out at the same time. You took the words out of my mouth. I also cannot trust Chicago -6 against anybody. I don't understand that spread.
All right.
So we're both taking the Giants.
So we're back to a little kumbaya now.
Yes. Vegas goes to Indy. Playoff implications there. Las Vegas at 8-7 and fighting for their spot. Indy at 9-6 and still fighting for a spot as well. Indy technically can still catch Tennessee for the division. Tennessee would have to go on a bit of a losing streak for that to happen. Vegas is right now sitting 10th, so they're there, but they got some work to do. They got some people to climb, even though they got the same record as the 7 seed Miami. They're down in the 10 hold thanks to all the tiebreaker situations. But you know it's going to be a tough game. But the Raiders are the big underdog. They are +8 at the Colts.
Yeah, picking the Raiders here at any point line, you know, at any point spread is really asking about trust. And this is just a team that's impossible to trust right now. I trust the Colts a lot more than I trust the Raiders. I mean, the Colts are going to bring that running game. They're going to be relentless. They got Carson Wentz cleared off of the protocols, so Carson Wentz is going to be there. And again, we had our full discussion in the first hour about Carson Wentz, and no, he's not the answer. He's not the greatest, but he's a steward of the offense. He runs the system, and he's been improving every week, and he's been playing mistake-free football. The Raiders aren't going to throw a lot of defense at you. They were good early, but I think they've been trending down defensively as well. I don't think they're going to hold up here against the Colts. I'm going to go ahead and take the Colts by about 10.
Carson Wentz has been already cleared today. He came down with the goop at the beginning of the week, but with all the different changes in the protocols, he's had enough time to already be cleared. And he's been activated off the list today, but he hasn't yet technically been cleared. He's still going to have to test negative and all that tomorrow morning for them to officially clear him. So there's a chance he's still not going to be able to make it. That would be a big
– It would. He's expected be a big deal to play, then. I guess is the word.
It would be a rookie quarterback, Sam Ehlinger, that would have to make the start for Indianapolis. But Carson Wentz being out and Sam Ehlinger being in, if that were to happen, to me – changes nothing because Indianapolis has to play around their quarterback anyway. So that wouldn't even actually, I'm not going to make any contingencies based on that. I don't think it's going to make that much of a difference. They've been playing around him very well, but I think the Vegas offense can possibly make it tight. And I think that's a little too much trust on any team quarterback by Carson Wentz to say that they're more than a touchdown favorite over you know, the Raiders aren't trash. They've just had a bunch of drama around them all year, but they're still 8-7. It's not like they're, you know, 4-11 or something like that. I'm going to take the points. I'll take the Raiders to stay within 8. If they lose by 7, I wouldn't be surprised.
Hey, that's a cover.
I've
got to win by 10. So we're both either, you know, we're both either right on opposite sides of this number. We're close. Could be a push.
Yeah, it could. Kansas City and Cincinnati should be a good one. Chiefs at 11-4 and the Bengals at 9-6. So the Bengals haven't clinched anything. Believe it or not, they still no one's
That's
clinched
crazy.
Anything in the AFC except for Kansas City. No one. Literally, the number 2 seed Titans could fall out of the playoffs still, and the Bengals are number 3 at the moment at 9-6. But they can fall all the way out because of that jumbled up division that they have. They clinch the AFC North if they beat the Chiefs. So they're trying to do that. The Chiefs are trying to clinch home field. They would have to win, and Tennessee would have to lose in order for that to happen. So they both have a lot riding on this game. Should be a fun one. Might be a fireworks show, depending on if they can get past the cold weather. You know, it's going to be cold in the Midwest and the North this weekend. But should be good. Travis Kelce will return from the goop list. Clyde Edwards-Helaire will sit out with his shoulder injury for Kansas City. Chiefs are still the favorites here. They are -4 at the Bengals.
Probably my favorite game this week. This is a fun one, right? I mean, this is Cincinnati, who has shown this season. They lead the league in guts. I'll give them that. they get to be the Jake Delhomme team this season for a team that we thought was going to be, you know, on the rise, but not necessarily that good. And they kept coming up against these games where we just keep expecting them that, well, this is going to be a sunning. Every time we thought Cincinnati was going to show up in a spot and get sunned, they've ripped people. So I'm not picking against them. I'm not saying they're going to win, but this feels like a field goal game to me either way. I think it's going to be the most fun game of the week. Even in the cold, I think there's going to be a lot of points put up on the board. Cincinnati is going to come in. And Cincinnati might be the biggest test defensively for the Chiefs that they've had in a while, because Cincinnati just comes at you so many different ways. They can run, they can throw, they don't just have one guy. I think they're confident. They're definitely cocky and confident. Joe Burrow doesn't lack confidence. I think he throws them into this game. I'll take Cincinnati and the points.
Yeah, white hot Joe Burrow versus the steadily improving Kansas City defense. I completely agree with all of that. That'll be the biggest test that the KCD has had in a while. They've had to hold up the Chiefs while they were going through their struggling offense, you know,
number 4 rated offense in football.
Man, how
right now number which is right now number 3.
How have they limped through this season with a number 4 offense and a number 3? Yeah, but no, there's no doubt the defense had been holding them up for a while now, and playing, you know, much better than anyone would possibly think. So now they run into Joe Burrow, who, yeah, like you said, thinks he's the greatest thing since sliced bread. So, yeah, this is going to be real fun. Will Pat Mahomes come in ready to show Burrow who's still the man? Will he give the sunning that we think that the Bengals have been asking for all year and haven't gotten, because apparently they're much better than we thought they were. So two robust offenses. I think the Kansas City defense would make the difference overall, but I was kind of surprised to see the spread. Like, I thought this would be close to a push situation.
Yeah.
To think about what the Bengals just got finished doing to Baltimore, and again, there's situations and circumstances to why the Ravens were that bad, but it's still an NFL team that Cincinnati just completely whacked, and that team is a 4-point dog to Kansas City is a little hard to believe. So I'm going to go same thing as you, to take the Bengals with the points, not necessarily to win, but to stay. Yeah, if Kansas City wins by a field goal at the end, then that absolutely covers. So, yeah, I think we both see that one the same way. But, I agree. Most fun game of the week.
As much as we talk about this improving Kansas City defense, this is still the 25th ranked pass D in football.
It is, but, boy, they've come a long way since the first half of the year, when they were giving up 8.6 yards per throw, and now they're only giving up 7.1. So they've really, you know, just on a per-play basis, they've definitely made a lot of strides. On to the Dolphins and the Titans. The aforementioned Titans are trying to put away that division. They're 10-5. They can do that by knocking off the Dolphins. Or if the Colts lose. Dolphins still fighting and trying to stay in that soup in the AFC playoff race, currently the 7th seed thanks to tiebreakers. Unbelievable that they fought their way from 1-7 to where they are now. So, you know, give them credit for doing it. No matter how little credit we want to take away from them because of the lack of competition. But in any event, they're there. Almost a cop-out line for this one. The 8-7 Dolphins, 3.5-point dogs at the 10-5 Titans.
I believe so little in the Dolphins here that I'm locking up the Tennessee Titans in this game because I'm done with these guys. The Dolphins have bum-slayed, and that's great. The Tennessee has proven one thing. Yes, they lost Derrick Henry. They lost their MVP-caliber running back, but they're not done. They're not bums. You know, as long as they've got a shell of that offense, they've been, you know, they have been getting running back production from just guys. But, you know, and Tannehill's been effective. As long as he's had either A.J. Brown or Julio Jones out there, he's been holding up. A very impressive win, what they did going out to San Francisco and winning that game last week. They know that they're in the driver's seat. I think there's a disrespect angle going with the Titans. I think that a lot of people, like, they've got to have that attitude of, you know, when Derrick Henry got hurt, like, hey, you know, we were pretty much counted out. They were going to give this division to the Colts. And here they are on the verge of clinching the division, and the Dolphins are trash. I'm sorry. I'm taking the Titans.
I really hesitate to keep denigrating and talking about the Dolphins because they just keep doing what they're supposed to do. I think they're trash too. I think we both see the same thing, but man, they came out Monday night and said, who Ian Butt, fuck him. And they just completely owned him. So got to give them credit for what they've done. But yeah, in general, I think we both think the same thing about Miami. They're not nearly as good as the 7-game win streak. And the Titans love to be the underdogs. They love to come show everybody, hey, you thought we was down? Watch this. We're going to do this, and we're going to just keep playing quality football. I thought they were going to take a huge tumble with the Derrick Henry injury.
Both of us did.
And they just keep doing it. They keep staying there, and they keep winning football games. There they are at 10-5, and poised to put that division away. It's kind of incredible what they've done, honestly. Miami, they're a different team since September. I'll give them credit for that. And Tennessee, sturdy as always. Ryan Tannehill, another team trying to play good football in spite of their quarterback and not because of it. I hope he doesn't throw it away to his old team. He's got the Dolphins. I hope he doesn't try to do too much and try to show them what they're missing and winds up making some mistakes and throwing it away to them. They got to rely on that run. They got to keep pounding that ball. They got to keep running that football, like you said, with guys you don't know.
That was Deontay Foreman, I believe,
right,
is the guy right now.
Dontrell Hilliard.
Yeah. Just got, you know. It's
complete
clearly
guys.
There's some scheme element to this, too. No, Ryan Tannehill is going to play a very clean game because his problem with the Dolphins was throwing the ball to the Dolphins.
He couldn't do it when he was on the Dolphins.
So in this game, as long as he doesn't throw it to the Dolphins, he's fine. So he'll be great in this game.
Just pretend like you're on the Dolphins and throw it to the Titans.
Right.
You'll be fine. Julio is not going to play. That stupid hammy just keeps acting up. He's also got gooped earlier in the week. But obviously A.J. Brown can do it all by himself because that's basically what he did last week. He was an absolute monster. I'm going to concur and give the 3.5 and take Tennessee. They like showing everybody, hey, don't count us out. Don't underestimate us. And I think they're going to put it on the Dolphins.
Can you think of a team that loves the disrespect angle more than the Titans?
I don't know. I don't know if I can think of a team that loves it more. They love it. Mike Vrabel loves it.
The win it ugly Titans, they're back.
Yep. They absolutely love it, especially down there at their home in Nashville. They got a great home field advantage, too. So should end the fish win streak here. Should. Man, if Miami wins this one, though.
Should. Better.
All right, biggest spread of the week. Little surprising considering last week's result, but nonetheless, the completely awful FedEx mail-it-in team, Jacksonville Jaguars at 2-13, are 17-point underdogs at an angry Bill Belichick in the 9-6 New England Patriots.
This is a hard one because, did Mac Jones show some chinks in the armor against the Bills? Well, that's also the number one defense in football. So I guess I'll give Mac Jones a pass for that, right? This is also Bill Belichick against a rookie quarterback. So, I mean, this is the direction. This is the rudderless ship Jacksonville Jaguars offense, and they get to go to try to play against the GOAT coach, the scheme master, the guy who relishes beating up on these rookie quarterbacks more than any other, as long as they're not that kid from the Jets. You know, as long as it's not him.
Mike White.
Mike White. As long as it's not the great Mike White, I think Bill Belichick's record is safe with the Jacksonville Jaguars. It's so many points. This is the only thing I'm having a hard time getting my head around. But I'm going to give them all. Jacksonville is so bad. They clearly are terrible. They had chances to beat the Jets. I don't know if they're just tanking for the pick or what's going on. But, yeah. Belichick and Mac Jones are coming off that loss. They need to keep the pressure on the Bills. They're definitely capable of bum slaying, you know. I mean, 24-3, that covers.
Hey, my pick was 27-3, so we're on the same track there, too. Like, the only bright spot of the Jags offense is their running back, James Robinson. He busted up his Achilles last week, so he's completely finished.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm going to concur. Belichick against any rookie quarterback, but especially this kid, Trevor Lawrence, who gets worse and worse and worse every week. I do not understand.
Do you blame him? At this point, can you honestly just blame Trevor Lawrence?
I definitely would not say it's all on him. No.
Yeah, no. Somebody gets another incomplete this season. Like, this is a lost season for, you know, Trevor Lawrence. Hopefully for him, all he's learning here is, like, the speed of the game and things like that, because I don't think he's getting anything of value down there in Jacksonville right now.
He's not playing like it. He's playing like he's got, like, no teaching or no tutoring at all. Like, he's by himself.
Like, here you go, kid. Go get killed.
Go get him.
I guess he stayed healthy. He's got that going.
Okay.
Tell me one Trevor Lawrence highlight, quick.
Late afternoon football. We'll see the Houston Texans go out to Santa Clara to take on the 49ers. Brandon Cooks will return from the goop for Houston. As far as San Fran, Trey Lance time once again. He's going to get a spot start for Janine Garoppolo, who busted up his thumb. And Elijah Mitchell should finally return from his knee injury at running back after missing several weeks. Texans 4-11. They are 13-point dogs at the 8-7 49ers.
Trey Lance scares me enough. Not that he's bad, but that he's a rookie and that he can do rookie things. And I every time I close my eyes and think of Trey Lance, I see that quadruple clutch that he had. In that game where I think it was
Debo. How long are you going to hold that against him?
How much has he played since then? How much meaningful football has he played since that moment?
Not a whole lot.
So until he shows me that that's not who he is, I'm going with General Mills. I'm taking Houston to keep it under 13. The one good drive might be enough.
You know, Kyle Shanahan should be able to manage Trey Lance to a squish over this team, but...
He should.
Just the 13 for a kid that has hardly played. I can't see that. And yeah, Houston showed that they got some guts about them. And then maybe General Mills has got some guts, and maybe he's going to be the guy that they, once they get rid of Deshaun Watson, they turn it over to General Mills and let's see how long he can hang with it. We've seen that over the years. A team turns it over to a sort of a journeyman quarterback and see how much run can we get out of you until we have to, you know, spend some capital and get a real quarterback in here. So, yeah, I'm going to concur and take the points. And I like San Fran too, of course. You know, that's my pet team. I guess I'm hipster Dre with the 49ers, like you're hipster Jay with the Bills. But minus 13 with Trey Lance, and you don't know what he's going to do throwing the football at all. Yeah, that's a bit much.
I mean, I'd have a hard time at minus 13 with Jimmy G.
Right.
And I'm not saying Houston's going to win here. I'm not going upset alert. But, yeah, this has got that sort of, like, you know, 27-17 kind of feel to it.
Yeah, I can see something like that. I got 20-11. I don't know why I picked such a weird score.
That feels like that truly is the one good drive. You get an 11 up on the board, that's a garbage time touchdown.
Right, yeah, I think that's pretty much what I see. It's like fourth quarter down 20-3, and let's get this and go for two and try to.
But even if they don't get it, 20-9 covers.
Indeed it does. Denver and the Clippers. Denver at 7-8, LA at 8-7, both of them fighting to get into that upper echelon of the AFC soup in the wild card race. Broncos, big 7.5-point dogs out in SoFi at the Clippers.
Yeah, I go back to that first game. Denver's defense really handled Justin Herbert, in that game up in Denver. If this was Teddy Bridgewater, I might go with them, but this is Drew Lock.
It's more Drew Lock.
Oh, no. and you're facing the Chargers team that just got embarrassed by Houston. This doesn't really feel, although I never underestimate the Chargers' ability to let somebody hang around on them. I think that the Chargers are going to be able to handle Denver. I mean, clearly they need to run 9 in the box, 10 in the box in this game, because Denver's only hope in this game is to take advantage of that leaky Chargers run D. But I think the Chargers are going to at least be smart enough to know that here, and Drew Lock's not going to put a lot of pressure on the secondary. So, yeah, I'll take the Chargers and give the points.
Yeah, 28-13, Denver beat L.A.
Yeah, they whooped
12.
Them.
Beyond 147 yards rushing as a team. Pat Surtain, the second, showing our age, not the original Pat Surtain for the Dolphins, but his kid, had two INTs in that game for the Broncos. This is a jumbled pick because of there's so many goop situations on both sides. Goop outbreak on Denver, Jerry Jeudy and some wide receivers, Courtland Sutton, are going to be deactivated. The defensive player Bradley Chubb and others. On the other side for LA, they're going to get their running back Austin Ekeler and their wide receiver Mike Williams back. They were gooped last week, so they get to get them back in the fold, but they are not out of the woods. They got Jared Cook, their tight end, is going to go on the goop list this week, and maybe some others will join him as well. So a little uncertainty as far as the rosters in that one. Basically, I'm going to take Denver because it's a hook, because it's 7.5, and that hook scares me with
that.
LA keeps everyone close, and LA with that terrible run defense should allow Denver to stay close and just on the running game alone. Denver ground versus Clippers air. It's bit of a toss-up there. Both should have big success against the other. I'm going to take the 7.5. If they lose by a touchdown, I'll win that pick. All right, Arizona and Dallas. Who believes in the Cardinals to turn things around in Dallas the way the Cowboys are playing right now? The Cards are 10-5, and the Cowboys are 11-4. They're definitely not playing like those records. Arizona's playing much worse than their record indicates. And the Cowboys showed a lot last week in their big Sunday night beatdown. Cards are 6.5-point dogs at Jerry World.
It's so tempting. It is so tempting to take Arizona here to kind of stand up and give that, like, that one last charge. Man, that Dallas offense is hitting on all cylinders right now. They've got the two-headed attack with the running backs. I think Tony Pollard's actually become more of that number one guy, even though Zeke had a decent game last week, found the end zone, but they've got that really nice sort of two-headed attack, which is working. They've got all the receivers. Yeah, there's so much offense going on. And this Arizona fade, which it has just been, it's been painful to watch. And then without DeAndre Hopkins, I mean, that was tempted to lock up this game just off of all of that. But, yeah, Arizona, as tempting as it is to say that they're going to stand up for themselves, this is a team that lost to the Lions. This is a team that's has looked bad repeatedly lately. And Dallas just seems to be that team that's just rolling. going into the playoffs, and knows that they do have that shot to get that number one seed. So, you know, sure they want that. I know there's a lot of Packer fans that are going to be Cardinal fans tomorrow, but I don't see it happening. I'll take Dallas squish.
Yeah, this would have been a real fun shootout if Nuke Hopkins was around. But going to Dallas the way they're playing right now and engaging in a shootout without your number one receiver, that seems like bad news for the Arizona Cardinals. So, yeah, I'm going to concur and give it a 6.5. I think the Cowboys are going to steamroll them as well.
I haven't heard a lock out of you yet.
Correct. Will it be in the NFC South matchup of the Panthers and the Saints? Carolina at 5-10 and the Saints at 7-8. And all the way back in week two, Carolina easily handled them down in Charlotte 26-7. And if we remember that one, it was weird, not just because Sam Darnold went for 305 and two TDs, but also because Jameis Winston was coming off of the surprise of week one. Destroying the Green Bay Packers and looking like a world beater, and then comes into this game and goes for 111 and two INTs. And it's like, okay, yeah, Jameis being completely inconsistent, you don't know what you're getting from one game to the next. That hasn't changed. Nothing.
That's why he's the wild thing.
Indeed. So obviously he's not going to be available for this one, but Taysom Tebow will return and come off the goop list and get the start for New Orleans. And New Orleans is very happy about that after what Ian Book did for them. Ugh, that was terrible. Panthers are probably because of that, actually definitely because of that. Panthers are the big underdog here, +6.5 at New Orleans.
I'm taking these points. I'm taking Carolina. I wouldn't be shocked if Carolina won the game. I'm not the biggest Taysom Tebow guy. Carolina, yes, on paper, they play good defense, but I don't trust Taysom Tebow. He's going to make some plays, but he's going to be capable of giving it back to you just as easily as anything else. I think Sam Darnold's fresh, if he's anything. He's probably one of the freshest guys going to be out there on the field tomorrow. And I think Carolina plays enough defense against Taysom Tebow, that is, and the Saints offense to kind of stymie them. I'm actually taking Carolina here on the upset alert.
Hmm. We called Taysom Tebow that name so much, I almost sometimes fool myself into thinking that Tebow's playing, but it's not. It's Taysom Hill, of course.
It's Taysom Hill.
But yeah, Ghost Boy versus Taysom Tebow or Taysom Hill. I know one thing. I love the under. I'm not locking anything up in this one either, but I love this under. So Darnold back starting is the official announcement, I believe, from Matt Rhule. I think that's probably going to lean towards what I have been saying, and I've been on record, correct me if I'm wrong, the way that the Panthers should have used Cam Newton when they picked him up
the gadget guy.
The end zone Superman guy and, you know, the short yardage guy. If you need even if you're in the middle of the field, if you only need a yard or two, now you send him in out there and you can run some option. You can, you don't have to just plow him up the middle. You can, try to fool the defense as well. But what you don't want is him out there trying to be a full quarterback and throw the ball and hit the out patterns and the square ends and the crossing routes and all that, because he can't do all that shit. His arm isn't that good anymore. He just can't do it. So this is probably what that's going to be. It's Sam Darnold doing everything in between the 20s and then Cam Newton coming in and doing the Superman stuff. So I concur. I will take Carolina to stay close with the +6.5. That's a lot of points to give to Taysom Tebow. And I think the Panthers will play the game the way it's supposed to be played, and they'll stay within a touchdown of the Saints. And they might win them. That may well be an upset. The Lions and the Seahawks, is either one an upset if either one of them win, because they're both so bad. Detroit 2-12-1, Seattle 5-10. Russell Wilson was feeling a little lonely because Big Ben was getting all the attention about this is going to be his last game. So Russell Wilson volunteers, hey, this might be my last game in Seattle, even though Seattle still has him under contract, which shows he's really trying to get out of there. So with all of that, Detroit is looking at Jared Goff still trying to get off of that sore knee. Looks like he's not going to make it. So more Tim Boyle at quarterback for the Lions. But they should get DeAndre Swift back off the goop list at running back. Lions are +7.5 at the Seahawks.
You know what? I don't really care about this game, but I'll tell you what. One of these teams has a ton of fight, and that's the Lions. And I'm going to take the Lions here, even with Tim Boyle. He's terrible, but he's playing against one of the worst defenses in football. This Russell Wilson, hey, I might be leaving. Yeah, it doesn't have the emotional weight, I think, that the Roethlisberger one is going to have on Monday night. So I'm going to take the Lions, the ankle biters. They will always give you a fight. And I think this is way too many points for an awful Seattle team.
Well, I tell you what, I think it will have an emotional impact the same as Ben Roethlisberger. Just because it's out in the West doesn't mean it's not going to have a big punch. Hey, Russ brought a championship to Seattle just like Ben brought a couple of championships to Pittsburgh. I think Seattle looks at Russ the same as Pittsburgh looks at Ben. I really do. And I think they're both probably going to be Hall of Fame quarterbacks.
I think that's a bargaining chip for Russell Wilson. I don't think that's like I'm about to retire.
No. I understand why he's doing it and why he's saying it. It's definitely different motivations.
Yes.
But as far as impact, as far as both of them going out on the field and getting the love and the applause from the crowd, I think they're both going to have very similar reactions. And I think Russ has the physical tools to actually make that count for something, unlike Ben Roethlisberger. So I'm going to give the points and take Seattle -7.5. I'm not locking that one up either. But I actually think Russ will play a much better game than he usually plays just because of the emotional situation there for him. And I will give the 7.5 there. And Tim Boyle is absolutely atrocious. On Sunday night, the Vikings play the Packers. Is it going to be single digits up there in Lambeau Field?
Yep, closer to zero by the time they get into the meat and potatoes of this game.
Kirk Cousins is gooped. He will not play a quarterback for Minnesota. It's going to be someone named Sean Mannion. 5 years, zero touchdowns, three INTs. That's the resume for Sean Mannion. And they won't have Adam Thielen at receiver. He's on injury reserve with his ankle injury. But Dalvin Cook will return, so it's not all bad for Minnesota. They are big 13-point dogs, Aaron Rodgers and the 12-3 pack.
You tell you what, Dalvin Cook owns the Packers. I know that. But the Packers know that too, and they also know that there's going to be zero threat of a passing game against them in this game. Talk about another game where you need 9 or 10 or 11 or 12 in the box. I don't think the Packers are going to let Dalvin Cook beat them. They're going to dare Sean Mannion to go on the road in what could be sub-zero temperatures by later in this game. This doesn't line up well for the Vikings. I think the Packers squish them.
Vikings had a surprise win in week 11. It was a back and forth affair.
Yep.
And they came out on top 34-31. The QBs in that game combined for 726 yards, seven touchdowns, no interceptions. Kirk Cousins isn't playing in this one, as I just said. So no Kirk, no repeat of that. And the Packers are going to be out for revenge off of that upset win playing against Sean Mannion. Yeah. Don't think Mr. Mannion is going to have much success. So that'll
Can't
be my
blame you
lock.
One bit for that. I thought that's where you would land once I looked at the remaining games.
All right, the Roethlisberger retirement game, the last Monday nighter of the year. How do you think that's going to go? The public thinks it's going to go to the Cleveland Browns because the 7-8 Browns are 3-point favorites on the road at the 7-7-1 Steelers.
I'm giving it to the Steelers. One for the road.
Yeah, I can understand that sentiment. I'm giving it to the Browns because, like I was saying with the Russ pick, I don't think Ben has the physical tools to come out and have this great game to go out on top. That's a fantasy, and that sounds good, but just imagining he's probably going to get a chance to. He's probably going to throw 60 times.
Realistically, didn't the Browns retire Roethlisberger in that wild card game? He just didn't get the memo?
He should have. You're absolutely right. I don't think they have much of a chance. Again, that's the type of game Tomlin wins, but I'm going to go with the Browns in this one. More on after show. now into our VIP after show program. I can't hear those the violins in that song anymore without thinking of your daughter dancing around and then wiggling to that song.
Yeah. Like the snake charmer dance.
And you told me that she loves dancing to that music. Now every time I hear it, I think of your daughter. So it's fun.
Yeah. Oh man. Yeah. Yeah. Well, just think, she'll be 10 soon.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Absolutely amazing. Where does the time go?
Oh man. It's been a fun ride. These almost 10 years of, you know, being a dad. I'll tell you what, I don't remember what life was like before kids.
It's been that long. You don't even remember.
I don't remember. You know, I mean, that's like a different me. I mean, that was like somebody else's life. I remember.
I only remember because that was the last time I was up there was for your wedding, and the kids weren't there yet, obviously.
Right. We've been down your way with them.
Yeah.
But yeah, the last time you were here was my wedding, and we were child free at that point.
Mm-hmm.
Not for long, but we were child free at that point.
I was up there helping you guys pick your fence out of the ground and dig that up and stuff. And I don't know what the heck I was doing, but I had to go sit down and rest a spell right after that because my heart started doing some stuff. So I don't know if I ever told you guys about that, but that was much more strenuous than I thought it was going to be. So I had to had to take a seat.
That was work pulling the fence posts out after our fence that blew over.
Yeah. Yeah, that was some tough stuff. That.
Yeah, my wife, we still talk about the, I think we found it when we were cleaning out the garage this summer, the fake flower bouquet that you and I had to make with the stapler.
Oh, God.
We still had that.
Wow.
So.
Yeah, that was a really long time ago.
Yeah. And then going to get the mani pedi because my wife wanted us to go and you were like, well, you know, I'll go if Jason's going, because you just assumed I was going to be like, no.
Right.
And then when you said that, I was like, oh, it's on.
You're like, oh, I gotta say yes now.
Yeah. So
yeah.
Now, yeah. So
I pulled your punk card and then you pulled it right back. You fooled me.
I did enjoy our little Twitter back and forth when I sent you that thing about somebody referencing the way I play Madden. I thought that was pretty funny when they were like, you know, pretty much anybody who actually played ball control in Madden was an asshole. And I was just like, oh, I guess I'm the asshole then.
Yes, I concur.
Yeah, I remember how like frustrated you would get when I would go on 14-play drives in Madden against you and just convert every third down.
And I don't think I ever told you about this either, but I went on from there to play a couple of times against like my uncle's son's friends or something like that.
Oh, no.
And so I started doing that to them, and they got so frustrated.
Oh, yeah. You want to – I mean, it works. It's not just good football strategy. It's like you're messing with your opponent psychologically because they just are expecting – it's Madden, so you're just going to play bombs away. They don't expect you to actually run the playbook.
Exactly. This kid, when I was pulling out screen passes, he had no idea. He was like, what? What was that? What? He didn't know what
I
was doing.
I mean, I remember playing, like who runs on 3rd and 7, you know?
Right. But you would get the first downs because I had all my blitz packages ready because who runs on 3rd and 7?
Yeah, who runs on 3rd and 7? I'm in dime defense. I'm not pressing anybody. Yeah, there's just running lanes everywhere. So, you know, and then the next time it gets to a 3rd down, I'm going to stack the line and throw over the top. So it's just that was always the fun of that game. Yeah, I thought it was funny because, you know, John Madden died this week and everybody's talking about, you know, Madden football. And obviously John Madden had other contributions than just John Madden football, but anybody who's, you know, 25 or younger, probably doesn't have a whole lot of recollection of him in the booth. Definitely doesn't have any recollection of him as a coach or an actual football personality like that. They just think of John Madden football.
Yep. Well, the game came out, you know, obviously while he was still broadcasting. So,
right.
But you're right. A lot of the kids don't even remember him as a broadcaster because his last game, I believe, was that Steelers Super Bowl win with Santonio Holmes, making that great touchdown catch. I think that was his last game.
It was one. I mean, it was towards the end, and that was a while ago. I mean, that was what 10?
Yeah.
Well, oh God, no, that was
2009 maybe.
Yeah, 2009. So we're talking, you know, so if you're, you know, 20, 25 years old, most of your football watching life of like watching and understanding football, John Madden was not a part of that.
Right. And even for us.
Right. And for us, we never saw a coach, really.
Exactly. We never had any idea that he was a coach except for, you know, every now and then you see some old highlight clips of it.
So John Madden for us growing up was Madden and Summerall.
Yeah, the broadcast crew.
Right. That was John Madden for us, and the boom, you know, and all the, you know, the
telestrator
stuff.
And
yeah,
the turducken and all that. Yeah.
So, you know, that was what that was for our growing up and watching football when he was like the head CBS crew with him and Pat Summerall, and people just went, who?
Yes,
Googling
CBS,
people.
Back when the NFC was on CBS, long time ago.
When the NFC was on CBS exclusively, and you had the NFL Today, and you know Jimmy the Greek, and Irv Cross, and Brent Musburger.
And then when Fox bought the NFC, Madden Summerall,
they migrated.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd have the turducken and all that stuff, right?
Mm-hmm. As far as the Madden game goes, of course, I have the experience that you can speak to because you saw it firsthand that when I went through my little breakdown situation with the awful relationship that I had in my late 20s, Madden and, of course, NBA Live and MVP Baseball played huge, huge parts in sort of, I don't want to say rehabilitating me, but I needed something to do in my life that didn't involve pussy. Cause pussy was driving me literally crazy, and Madden was there, the other two games as well. And I really went full hog on it. I went notebooks, keeping the schedule. I would take the PlayStation system and the games with me to people's houses if I was staying overnight because I had to stay on my schedule because that's what I needed at that time in my life because I needed that structure. And it was there, and I'm very glad it was there, and I don't have to do that anymore because now I'm happily married. But at that time in my life, it was something I really, really needed. And I'm sure there's other people with similar stories like that, that the structure that it gives you. For people like me who will never coach high school, coach college, anything like that, it gives us the opportunity to put our minds and our energies into sports in a way that, you know, if we were coaching, if, you know, we can now imagine that thanks to those games, hey, if I was, you know, 3rd and 13 and down 2 scores, what would I do? Or up 2 scores and all that stuff. The technological advances of those games that made them so much closer to real football. Of course, we remember the 80s and the video games there. You get, you know, basically 4 options for your plays. But Madden comes along and he insists on it being more realistic. I definitely remember reading many years ago about, like, he had to fight I think it was EA Sports from the beginning to make it 11 on 11 because all those other football video games was basically, you know, 7-on-7, 5-on-5,
right.
Just trying to keep it as simple as possible. And he wanted it to be as close to real football as it could possibly be with actual offensive linemen and actual, you know, defensive linemen and linebackers and secondaries and everything that you actually have to think about. So is not just his name being on the game, but his input and his insistence of a high quality of that game. That's why it is, you know, so far and ahead the leading sports game, you know, of all time, and continues to be every year for good reason, because of the high quality and the high standard. And you actually have John Madden to thank for that, because he insisted on it.
And EA played dirty. EA was able to buy the exclusive rights away, you know, or buy the exclusive rights to the NFL franchise when there were some competitors that were starting to rise up against them. So they definitely monopolized that. They paid big money for it. But they became the dominant football franchise, you know, back in, what, 2005. They've been the exclusive game. And I actually believe that that's somewhat stagnated, that Madden franchise. That's not Madden's fault. That's more of an EA thing, where every year now Madden feels basically just like a patch. The new, you know? It's like they should just come out with one version of Madden and just keep updating the rosters, and, you know, you just play like Madden Online and you only have to buy the game once, or just make it free to play and then just buy the new rosters every year, because the incremental improvements since they actually bought the rights to the franchise have been sad. My favorite Madden was Madden 03, which I believe was the one that you played the hell out of. That was by far and away my favorite Madden of all the Madden games. Wasn't the most graphically intense one, but I'll tell you what, it's more photorealistic now, but I don't believe that the gameplay is dramatically better now than it was back then, because I've played the more recent Maddens, and it's just the same game over and over and over again, so...
But even that one back then, your mother was still walking in and thinking it was an actual football game.
No, I mean, MVP Baseball, Madden 03, you know, and NBA Live, but that generation, those mid-2000s, when EA was really, like, in the prime of making those sports titles, you know, because there were competitors. 2K Sports was really starting to, you know, put the screws to them. Their baseball franchise just got obliterated by the show. The Sony franchise, that MLB The Show is just, yeah, there's a reason why EA is not out there putting out baseball games anymore. They clearly just don't have the ability to compete with that franchise. And 2K put the screws to them with the NBA. So
right.
EA had to buy those rights away from the NFL because they had put out NFL 2K5. You know, back in 2005, and then Sega released that for $20, and that's still my favorite football game of all time. But most of my favorite football memories came from Madden 03.
Yep. Yeah, that just happened to be the game that was out when I, you know, went through my situation. So,
yeah.
But yeah, it was a great game. I was able to keep that franchise going for so long that there was literally no real players left by the time I was through playing it.
Yeah, the made-up guys make it fun.
Oh, man, especially when you succeed with them and you remember them.
You end up more right. We make jokes about, you know, Baron Armstrong and
that was my quarterback.
And, you know, Eli Fortner, you know. and Ramon Baez. It's one from each franchise there. We make jokes about these guys, but... You know, I think you have more attachment to the made-up guys than you do the digital avatars of the real guys, you know?
Well, for guys like us who go into that franchise mode and take pride in building teams and actually sitting there scouting and trying to figure out which of the made-up guys is the best fit for my team, which one's going to actually produce the best. Like I said, that was the appeal. For guys like us who don't go into coaching, but who still have those, you know, have a love of sports, that much of a love that we could be coaches if we wanted to, have that so much knowledge because we've been watching for so many years since we were children, that gave us the chance to go, you know, and be the GMs and be the coach and you know, pretend like we're, you know, on those same levels. And I don't know what I would have done with my life. If I didn't have that outlet, if I didn't have that opportunity to put so many resources into that and do that. And I know that I'm, you know, that the weird guy. I know that there's people that are probably still talking about me to this day from back then. Hey, are you still friends with that guy that used to carry his video game everywhere that he went and used to play and keep track of the scores and whatnot in the notebook? I'm that guy. I get it. I understand it. I admit it. But, man, I needed that at that time in my life, and I'm very grateful and glad that I had it. And I'm grateful to John Madden for, like I said, insisting on having such a high-quality game to allow me to sort of lose myself in that, because at that point in time, I needed it.
Yeah, and you know, you go back, and my God, I mean, we always made fun of Joe Madden. We haven't brought it up a lot with the, you know, Drew Bledsoe played a hell of a game after he pretty much crapped the bed in that Super Bowl against the Packers. But you know, you think about where the, you know, Fox crew, you know, with the gold standard for them right now is Buck and Aikman. Oh man,
yeah.
Those guys, you know, as sick as we got of Madden and Summerall, I'd take Madden and Summerall over Buck and Aikman any day.
Now that we don't have them, we miss them terribly.
That's right. That's right. Absence makes the fart. Absence makes the heart grow fonder.
Oh, that is awesome. Absence makes the fart grow harder? What?
No. I don't know. Man, I'm tired.
Oh, my God. That is awesome. That is a...
You're going to rip that one, aren't you? Wait,
should.
So to speak.
No, it sounds like you ripped that one. Oh, man.
I have a feeling that one's getting pulled off the show and put under the... That makes the fart. Yeah, oh, no.
Hey!
Oh, wow. I don't know if I can go on after that. I don't think I have anything else to add.
Uh-oh.
I can't top that.
I took your will to host host the show.
I don't really have much left anyway. I would say also RIP to Betty White.
Dan Reeves,
unbelievable run that she had.
Yeah, Dan Reeves died today.
Yeah.
Saw that. The dirty birds. You know, got those Dirty Bird Falcons to the Super Bowl, coached all those Elway teams.
It's crazy that that's my first visual when I think of Dan Reeves is him standing up there doing the Dirty Bird dance.
Doing the Dirty Bird
the
with Jamal
title.
Anderson, yeah.
It's crazy how certain images stick in your head. I don't know if that was his proudest moment in life, but that's the first thing I thought
of. No,
but
I'll tell you what, that 98 Falcons team, I know they lost the Super Bowl. That was a fun team, that Dirty Bird team. That was sort of that lightning in a bottle, that 14-2 run that they went on, that championship game against, I mean, we won't get Cass on the show, but that 98 championship game, still the greatest championship game, I think. I've ever seen. I mean, that was that game they played against the Vikings was bad. That just that back and forth, and there was drama and comebacks, you know, and the missed field goal. The guy who hadn't missed a field, Gary Anderson, hadn't missed a field goal all year.
Mm-hmm.
Yet misses a 38-yarder that would have iced the game, and then that touchdown to Terrence Mathis to send it to overtime, and then Morton Anderson kicks him into the Super Bowl. So,
the personalities on that team.
Not like I don't – oh, man. Yeah. Chris Chandler playing out of his mind that year. You know, with Jamal Anderson having that season he had and then comes back the next season, blows his knee out in the first game.
Yeah.
And that was pretty much the end of him after that run that he had for them. That was a fun team. I remember Tony Martin, just 80-yard bomb every week, it seemed like.
And then we won't talk about Eugene Robinson.
And then that sort of, Eugene Robinson, you know, well, hey, he's in the Hall of Infamy.
He is. But that whole team could be in the Hall of Infamy because that was quite
the
team.
Birds, yeah, they were a fun group. They were a fun group, you know, but... How many times do we have an NFC championship or even an AFC championship with a 15-1 and a 14-2 team?
Not very often. And like you said, that game had all the drama and all the back and forth. And I definitely remember watching it. And
as Randy Moss's rookie year.
Oh, yeah. And then Randall Cunningham.
Yeah.
playing out of his mind. Yeah, quite a run of deaths in the last few days, right, leading right up to the new year. Is crazy. And that Betty White one was really crazy because I was just walking around in the store.
Everybody was like all about to celebrate her for turning 100, and every it's gonna be crazy. She's gonna have this 100-year anniversary. She's dead.
Oops, almost made it. There was tabloid. I'm walking around in the store and I'm seeing papers celebrating her 100. Betty White turns 100. It's like
you got to get there first.
Didn't quite get there. It was nice to put it out thinking she was going to make it because she's got to this point and it's like she's never going to die. So, I thought she was going to go to 115. I know that. So
they had their Dewey defeats Truman moment.
Yes, they did. whichever tabloid that was, People Magazine or something.
And there goes the rest of our audience.
If you didn't know by now.
They probably think we're talking about boxing.
If you didn't know by now that we're those type of people to go there and bring up the old references and also be a little tasteless. You haven't been listening very carefully because we can do all of that. Dewey v. Truman. Look that up too. Google it, kids.
It's not UFC.
No.
Little before your time.
Or WWE. Which they had some drama tonight just because they got a pay-per-view tonight it was going as we were on the air they were so desperate. They were going back to the Roman Reigns, Brock Lesnar as their main event. They were going back to that. Well,
man, did they just did they just like show videotaped performances by that? Do they even have to wrestle live anymore?
Not really. If you showed the replay of WrestleMania, you wouldn't really be missing anything because I don't think they have any new moves since then. But that couldn't even come off because Roman Reigns got the goop. So I don't quite know what they did tonight, but Roman Reigns wasn't involved. That much I know. But I will
go here quickly and I'll give you our NBA minute.
Okay.
Hey, the Bulls don't stink.
Yeah, they're not bad. Whatever that last-minute win over the Pacers was that last night?
Apparently it's contagious because they did it again.
They did it again. But the one last night, my uncle was actually at that one live. So
yeah, I saw that. I saw that one-footed three by DeMar DeRozan. I was like, you got to be kidding. Well, he's been a great player back even from Toronto.
Yeah.
And that, folks, is your NBA Minute.
And there you have it. I was actually playing some, daily fantasy NBA, last week and the week before, because that's, I guess, how bored I was. I kind of dipped my toe back into that water. I didn't do very well, but I was playing a little bit. The Bulls actually have players. They got DeRozan, they have Lonzo Ball. They actually got some people contributing for them. It's kind of exciting because they're one of the better records in the East. So I don't know how far they're going to take it, but yeah, I'm happy to see it.
No, and that's what's surprising is I paid so little attention to them.
Right.
But then you look at the roster and it's like, okay, Zach LaVine's a player, they got DeRozan, so it's like, okay, there's actual reasons to be excited if you're a fan of the Bulls, which I don't even know if I can say I'm a fan of the Bulls because I haven't watched them in so long, but I'm glad they're doing well.
Yeah, I guess I'm in the same boat. I can't say that I keep up with them because they're not on TV because they've been so bad for so long. So get to watch them.
Exactly. And watching, obviously I don't root. I mean, I was rooting for the Bucks just because it was the local interest team. And I've watched a lot of Bucks because of work. And my family was all rooting for them. So I was happy for them to win. But I don't really go and consider myself a Bucks fan. So now my fandom of basketball is just, if it's on, I want to see something good.
Yeah, certainly. And the Grizzlies down here are actually pretty good too.
But the Bulls being good, is that's good for basketball.
Yeah, I would think so.
You know, it's a huge market. There's all the history there, but man, they've been so bad for so long.
They have.
So seeing them, you know, 24-10, it's good to have them back. It's also good to have the Warriors back.
And that Steph Curry guy who can kind of shoot.
He's pretty good, yes. But yeah, they've been trashed for the last couple of years and injured and they look pretty good again too.
Yeah, definitely. I'm actually wearing a Bulls tee doing this show tonight, but that's because my wife actually bought that for me as my birthday present. She bought me some Bulls pajamas. So.
Oh, well, there you go. Should have bought them a few years ago when they would have been heavily discounted.
Probably. Well, you know, you can always find them discounted somewhere on the web. You can always find some stuff that isn't officially licensed, so you can get it a lot cheaper. It might not say Chicago Bulls. It might say, like, C-H-A-C-I-G-O or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
You can find them. They're all out there. All right. I think we're about done.
Yeah. I'm yawning pretty good here. My eyes are watering. Yeah. It's I didn't get a lot of sleep last night. I was up early, and I got to get up. I'll be up by 6:30 again tomorrow morning and off to work.
Oof.
I mean, I had it so nice, though. I mean, being off for 6 days in a row. So I got a little spoiled being home with the kids, and you know, my wife was home for a few of those days. And yeah, going back to work has been a challenge. And of course, it's at a real, you know, busy stretch in the schedule. So I'm just waiting. I'm more excited to just get back onto a regular work schedule here again, you know? So
right.
I'll be in much better shape by our next show, because our next show will be, I would say Saturday night, right? There's no Saturday games next week. We're going into the last week, which means we'll have three guest pickers.
That's right. And the key factors with their input.
And an inanimate object.
Because the last week of the season, which used to be 17, yes, but is now 18, for you new listeners, is always such a coin flip. And many years ago, we decided, you know what? Why don't we actually flip a coin and see if it does better than us for these games in that last week of the season? So yeah, we'll be actually flipping a coin live during the show, and then we'll be comparing that to your kids who don't watch any football but still have opinions anyway, right?
And Grant went 10-6 last year.
He did. He beat everybody. Beat us. Beat the coin. I believe he was the best.
The coin, which is the official IMLD I predict dime.
Hey, you gotta say it like you mean it. Hey, cool breeze.
Well, yeah, that's on the agenda for next week when the regular season finally comes to an end.
Mercifully ends. But at least last year, and I'm noticing it this year, because of this one team only gets the bye, and you have that extra wild card team. Just there's more teams and more games that matter now in that last week. So it wasn't as crazy in that final week last year as it had been as we're accustomed to.
Yeah, there is more games that matter. That's true.
Yes, and this trend that they've had over the last several years of everybody plays a divisional game in the final week too makes sense, because that's going to lend itself to some drama, right?
Yeah, that's only fair.
And that's also
a divisional matchup.
You're guaranteed then that somebody is playing for a division or somebody's playing for something next week.
Yeah, it'd be really hard for everyone to have their division totally clinched if they still have a division game left at the end of the year. So, yeah, it's pretty much guaranteed. That
as long as we don't end up with another game like that Philly-Washington game where where Doug Peterson pulled Jalen Hurts.
Yeah.
At the, oh, That was so hard to watch.
Yeah, it was awful.
So, don't want that again.
Definitely. So we'll see how everything shakes down.
Happy New Year to you. I'll be a year older next time we talk.
That's right. But until then, respect your elders.
My turn. It's my turn. Ah. My turn to be old. Old like you.
Oh, I feel like I should have a cane. Yeah, I'm doing the same as you, looking forward to next week going back to the normal schedule that I'm on, just because I didn't have as many days off as you, but we did have Christmas and New Year's off, so I got to actually have a real weekend and have my Saturdays to myself 2 weeks in a row, and I can definitely get used to that. But next week we'll be back to the normal schedule. I'm not looking forward to the friggin' weather down here. It was in the 70s all week long and last week. And then tomorrow the high is going to be like 38, just out of nowhere. It was 70 today, and the high tomorrow is supposed to be 38. We're going to drop like 40 degrees between now and tomorrow. Because I was looking at the weather, and I was looking at how cold it was up there and in other parts of the country. They played the hockey classic outdoors in Minnesota this year, and it was like minus 18 degrees or something stupid like that. And it's 70 degrees down here. And I'm like, okay, what the fuck? Cause I'm used to us being much warmer than up there, but not that much warmer. I'm not used to 70 and 80 degrees warmer than up there. And it's just because the cold front is on its way. It just hadn't got here yet, but apparently by tomorrow it's going to get here. And then it's going to be in the 30s all week. And then next weekend it's supposed to be like down for a low of like 14. And around here, as you know, that is like death. Like I'm not looking forward to that at all. So,
well, I mean, our high tomorrow is going to be 11.
Right. But that's more like it. If our high is 38 and yours is 11, then, you know, 20 degrees warmer than you, that's normal. But today we were probably 70 degrees normal than you guys, and that's definitely
we were probably mid teens today, I would say.
Yeah. And we were still 75.
It started out okay. We started out warm. You know, when I left for work this morning, it wasn't too bad, and then when I left work, it was brutally cold and windy. It was like, oh, winter just got here again. It was bad. So,
no, that's what we're expecting tomorrow, apparently.
Well, as long as you don't get the snow and the crazy drivers and
I'm really hoping we don't get that. Really hope so. No. We can only hope. And snow, of course, here is different than up there. It doesn't take much here to ruin everything.
No.
Like, if we get an inch, it's all over.
Everything shuts down.
Yes. All right. So football tomorrow, week 17, 15 games, and then Monday night, the Big Ben Pittsburgh finale, apparently, according to him. And then next week, week 18, all 16 games will be on Sunday. So finally the season winding down for us. All right, so like you said, next Saturday night, same time, 9 p.m. Central, 10 p.m. Eastern, for our football party, where we make our picks and the coin makes a pick and the cute factories make their picks. And we all get to make some picks for week 18. We'll see how that works out. All right. He is Jay. I am Dre. This has been In Much Less Detail, the podcast. Thank you for coming to our football party, the first one of 2022. And here's to a much better 2022 than 2020 and 2021. Because good God, this decade has sucked so far out of the first 2 years. Hopefully it'll get much, much better as we go along. Thank you all for listening, and come back next week, same time, same place, In Much Less Detail, the podcast. We will talk to you then.